right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the July 8th meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. If you do need a little assistance hearing proceedings in chambers, we do have hearing assist devices stored on the dais. And with that, if you would all please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, changes to today's agenda?
Certainly. Amendment number one to the July 8th, 2014 board agenda. Added item to consent. Item number 49, submittal of a resolution to allow emergency contracting for Nacimiento water pipeline repairs by 4/5 vote and authorize the Director of Public Works to execute contracts up to $100,000, District 1. Number 35, submittal of right-of-way documents accepting conveyance from Brothers Investment Company, Robert Hayashi Family Trust, and Valley Investment Company for Branch Mill Road Bridge Replacement Project in Arroyo Grande. Staff is withdrawing this item, District 4. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied, as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Thank you very much. With that, we come to the consent agenda. I see Ms. Rodewald, our clerk recorder, approaching. We'll take her first, followed by Jennifer Colvard and Jeff Wurst.
Good morning. Welcome back, board members. I'm Julie Rodewald, county clerk recorder. On your agenda today is the certification or the presentation to you of the results from the June election. And I just wanted to highlight a couple of things that I thought were, I guess, encouraging for our county. We had almost a little over a 43% turnout, which beat every county of our comparable size. And if you saw the results from the state, far exceeded the turnout of 25% statewide. So I'm pleased with our voters that they, at least that many turned out. We would have liked to see a much greater turnout. But also, we had over 75% of our voters vote by mail, a trend that's continuing. This was the largest percentage that we've seen in a regularly scheduled election. We'll probably see that come down in November, but again, we're encouraged that those people that we're sending ballots to are turning them back in and that our voters are getting out and voting. And if you've been following the news, you also know that there's a recount going on for the controller's race. It's about, I think, 480 vote difference between the second and third candidates. So far, we've dodged the bullet. There is no recount going on in San Luis Obispo County, and we're hoping that it'll be resolved before it gets to us. Thank you.
It's because you did it right the first time, right?
Well, I think that all of us did it right the first time, but nobody wants to believe that until they see it for themselves.
Thank you, Ms. Rodewald, and we'll look forward to your next election. Ms. Colvard, followed by Jeff Wurst.
For the record, my name is Jennifer Colvard with the County Public Works Department. We are amending item one to today's agenda by replacing the resolution to clarify the noticing reference and requirement and to clarify direction to the clerk to publish the notice of said hearing and the resolution of intention. The clerk has already received the amended resolution. I do have copies for the board members. Thank you.
Okay.
39.
All right.
And that's without item 35.
As amended, without item 35 and with the added item of number 45, I do believe. 49. With the addition of item 49, the removal of 35, Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Ms. Ray?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
And Mr. Gibson?
Yes. Thank you. With that, then, we'll come to public comment for items not on the agenda.
Presentation.
I'm sorry. So as we move to our, thank you, Madam Clerk, very much. We'll go to our presentation calendar. As we move to that, we've had a request on one of the items to pull it for another day because certain members of the public could not be here to participate, and that would be item 41. We were going to receive a presentation by members of the Building Design and Construction Cluster from our local local EVC, our economic strategy. So with that, I would then entertain a motion on the remaining items on presentation.
So moved.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Meacham.
Seconds, but I don't see the Family Care Network honorees.
All right.
Now, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Tell you what we'll do is let's go ahead and take Mr. Meacham's motion, your second. We'll vote this and we'll present when we have the right people in the room to do that.
So item number 41 has been withdrawn from the presentation calendar.
Okay. Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Ray?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes. I do see Ms. Warren and Mr. Warren. If you would come to the microphone, Ingrid, it's my pleasure to read a resolution. That I had stored in a secure location so I wouldn't forget where it was. In recognition of your retirement upon 33 years of service with San Luis Obispo County, the following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas Ingrid Warren joined the county on September 20th, 1980, and spent 18 years in the assessor's office, starting as an appraiser trainee and working her way up to an appraiser three, specializing in the assessment of agricultural properties. And whereas Ingrid made the transition to general services in 1999 as an associate real property agent and has spent 15 years specializing in commercial real estate leases for county departments. And whereas Ingrid's fairness, intelligence, and sincerity in working with property owners has helped the county maintain an excellent reputation in real estate matters. And whereas Ingrid's strong work ethic and knowledge of the land came in part from living with her husband and their three children on a 330-acre ranch where her daily routine was to get up early, feed the dogs, goats, sheep, horses, chickens, cattle, and chinchilla before coming to work at 8 a.m. each day. And whereas, in spite of her harrowing schedule, Ingrid still had the energy to be a top-rated national competitor in the triathlon and continues to compete to this day. And whereas Ingrid Warren will be missed by her co-workers and by all employees she has assisted with their real property needs through the virtually every department of the county. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo that Ingrid Warren is hereby commended and thanked for her 33 years of dedicated service to the citizens of this county and to the county's mission, vision, and values, and she is wished the best of health and happiness as she jogs off into the sunset of her retirement. And, as Ingrid takes one lectern, and we'll hear from Ms. Pell. It's been my pleasure to be a friend of Ingrid's for long before I ever entered county service, and knowing the life of the ranch and the energy that I've seen her display on the road, it is truly amazing that she manages to have a day job included in that routine. Ms.
Yes.
Pell.
Good morning. Jeanette Pell, General Services Agency Director. And Ingrid, today we recognize you for 33 years of dedicated county service. You have had a distinguished career with the assessor's office, and we were lucky enough to get you in the General Services Agency 15 years ago. You've successfully negotiated countless lease agreements for county departments. You are always trying to meet the needs of other county departments, and you always did it with a smile. When I think about you, you've always been humble. You are hardworking, clearly, as we heard in the resolution, and you're well-respected amongst your peers and other county employees. So although retirements are a joyous time, you should know that the entire county will miss you, and we hope that you keep in touch with us.
And real property owners to feel that they are dealt with fairly. But on a more personal note, Ingrid has been very fun to work with for everyone in the office. I would say, for example, not everyone spends their weekends branding. her life at home on the ranch with Richard has resulted in a lot of good stories, like the horse that she owns that's afraid to cross water and afraid of anything that flutters, like trees. That must be fun. Then there was the rattlesnake under her washing machine and a herd of zebras that broke through the fence and roamed the ranch for a while. There's a bobcat that liked to lay on her front porch and bobcat cubs that played in her yard. There were the farm fresh eggs that she would bring in regularly, very delicious in different colors. There was her beloved pet wolf, Rufio, who liked to get out of his pen until finally he was about 17, and I think they managed to keep him in his pen. And I'm going to say that it's pretty likely that no one at the county has ever requested vacation time to get their take their chinchilla to the vet to have its teeth ground so it could eat. Pretty likely. The other incredible thing about Ingrid, or one of the other incredible things, is the many awards on her walls for her triathlons. She works hard at this hobby, and she would take a very different kind of lunch break than most of us would. Typically, that would include swimming laps at Sinsheimer Pool, or going for a miles-long bike ride, or running, for instance, out Cal Poly Canyon and back, or up and down Madonna Mountain. Amazing. She is really an amazing person. And with her husband, Richard, who also officially retired on Independence Day, appropriate, they have nearly 70 years of combined years with the county. And I'm not sure, but that just might be a record. We wish you guys both the absolute best.
Thank you.
You're here.
Chairman Gibson, members of the board, I have truly enjoyed my years with the county. I've met many, many friends, lifelong friends. I'm a little disappointed that my husband wasn't honored as well today, because he truly deserves to be honored for his years of service too. So I'll ask him to stand up and be recognized, and also let you know that I couldn't have done any of it without his support. He's up feeding animals as well. In fact, we dropped the chinchilla off, Sweet Peas, getting her teeth done this morning. Have to save gas these days, you know. One trip to town. So, there's no way that we could manage to do everything that we do without him, as well as the triathlon feats, because most of the time he's driving me to them because I'm too nervous to drive. And I'm not a public speaker, but I want to thank you all for all your support, and especially General Services and Linda for the many years of friendship, as well as many others. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ingrid. Photo op if you want. We'll do the photo op, and I think Supervisor Meacham and Supervisor Arnold might have comments here.
You guys have been so much fun.
I have to apologize for any misunderstanding. I saw your resolution on the agenda. I was figuring he was still taking care of traffic signals.
I know.
I didn't realize that he had pulled the plug, if you don't mind me using that. Disconnected, as it were, on that. I'll pass it to my colleagues and come back and thank Richard as well.
First of all, Richard, thank you so much. And obviously, you're quite a team. And Ingrid, I got to say that in the short time that I've been here, about 6 years, I have never not seen you without a smile on your face and a welcome anytime we run into each other in the elevator or the hallway. So it's been a pleasure to know you, and I wish you all the best on all of your hobbies.
Thank you.
Supervisor Arnold?
Yeah, well, and I imagine we will be recognizing Richard formally soon up here. But anyway, Ingrid, today I just wanted to share it came across on social media.
I do believe. Until we do the public comment, we'll take the slips on public comment we have at the dais right now. I do believe we have seven. We'll start with Eric Greening and followed by Ben DeFada.
Good morning. I'm going to run through a whole bunch of dates of interesting and important things coming up. Tomorrow, the 101 corridor study is going to be presented at the SLO Library Community Room, 5:30 to 7:30. You got a little taste of it, but I think there'll be a lot more material there. Next week, Tuesday evening, Dogger, Department of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Regulation, will be in Santa Maria at the supervisors' chambers there in the evening after your daytime meeting, 7 p.m., and they will be looking at their regulations on well stimulation, including fracking. And, of course, in my opinion, the regulation we need is a ban or at least a moratorium until some very big questions are answered. But in any event, that will be as close to here as they get in their statewide dog and pony show. On July 24th, Thursday, July 24th, there will be a presentation by Slow Clean Energy at the library community room here in SLO relative to it's the community choice aggregation, one of those things like bugs black blood, hard to say, but there'll be the deputy chief engineer of the Sonoma County Water Agency talking about Sonoma Clean Power and an example of how it can be done. Then on the 26th, Sunday the 26th, Ray Wayman will be speaking on climate change at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship on South Street, 2 p.m. And then on the 28th, I notice from your own agenda packet, that is the day comments are due on the negative declaration on the Choro Valley intertie, and I was disappointed to see that it is a negative declaration because I was hoping with an EIR we would get the kind of alternatives analysis that I think we need. But I would caution the departments involved that the bar for a negative declaration is very, very high. If there's going to be any damage to the environment, including the environment at the source where the water from which the water would be moved, a negative declaration won't do it. CEQA allows damage to the environment, but not in ignorance. You can only damage the environment significantly with an EIR and with findings of overriding considerations. But anyway, the date to get comments in on that will be July 28th, and I still think we need an EIR. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. DeFada, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning, Board, Sheriff, and public. Ben DeFada here from Los Osos, and I'm here today to tell you what the natives in Los Osos are saying. Some of you here may call it boring, but at some time, some of you may wake up someday and see the light. While you are all were on a long vacation, you may have heard that Detroit is shutting off water to thousands every week as desperate citizens of Detroit are appealing for financial help from anyone to help pay their water bills. It says that the water company has begun shutting off water to 3,000 people a week and could soon cut off access to drinkable water from outside sources for 150,000 Detroit residents who have failed to pay their water bills. The report further states that, in fact, the water rates in Detroit are nearly double the national average of $75 a month as compared to $40 a month for most Americans in the country. Here in Los Osos, the Golden State Water Company users are paying three times more than the national average. Along with the high cost of Mr. Gibson's unaffordable sewer, which he and Arvin and now Waddell won't tell you that what's happening in Detroit will also happen here big time. Why are I and others constantly bringing this up? Well, I'm sure you know why, but you can't admit it for some reason or another that this county's choice of an overpriced, unaffordable, antiquated energy hog stinking gravity system was a big mistake. But you have done borders on Trimmer by causing several thousand citizens of Los Osos hardships, hard times mentally and physically, thus causing many to lose their homes also. L. Ron Hubbard said the best way to enslave people is economically. Jobs, cost of utilities, tax them to death, and take away their guns so that the citizens cannot live a North Shore sure. and slaughtered
Mr.
animals in the
back. Thank you. Ms. Owen, followed by Cindy Steinbeck.
Good morning, everyone. Lindy Owen from Los Osos. Again, I pretty much want to focus on water, and we know that the whole county is dealing with water issues. And Los Osos is not only dealing with just water issues. We have a sewer gone awry, and no management of where the treated million gallons a day are going to land, which puts our basin in even further peril. We also are looking at some very odd situations where we have two main water purveyors, as well as the county, who manages all the private wells. And the negotiations have taken, I don't know, 6 years or more, hundreds of thousands of dollars of legal fees and a lot of combat to try to get a for-profit company, Golden State, to come to terms with a not-for-profit LOCSD water management. They run about half of the purveyors part of the basin. What we're looking at is we need to, for the best of the people of Los Osos, pull together and look at a buyout of the privatized water situation. Golden State has caused problems in so many communities with their privatization and the extremely high rates that they end up having. And we're asking our LOCSD to come on board. But our LOCSD has been somewhat polluted, should I say, by pressure from the county. So we're trying to get action in somebody coming to stand up and make sure that our basin gets taken care of. Mr. Gibson has bailed out. We knew that when he suggested that we dump a million gallons a day at the Tonini Ranch, which was way outside our basin. So we're trying to organize a group. Los Osos Flow is proposing that we look at a buyout, but we need to get our CSD on board. I'm putting it out publicly that those are the only things that are going to save our basin. And then back to Mr. Gibson discussed pulling the plug for former retirement situation. Speaking about pulling the plug, what happens with Mr. Pava Ogren gone now? He is the one who pretty much misdirected us into the very most expensive sewer per capita in the country. At this point, it's got cost overruns galore, a $15 million lawsuit, and he's bailing. He's going to Oceano, and we have no idea now. We still have no oversight. We still have no accounting. Are you just bailing on us, too? Because we're looking at probably $250 a month for the sewer because it's been so mismanaged.
Thank
we
you,
appreciate
Owen.
Your support.
Ms. Steinbeck, followed by Mike Brown.
Cindy Steinbeck, Paso Robles. I have one very simple request this morning, and that is that you put an agenda item that withdraws your board's support of AB 2453. Prags and Pro Water have withdrawn their support of it. One thing that's very scary to me, and I've read the bill as it stands amended now, it's the same thing I read in the paper, and that is there are powers in there that just practically made me fall over when I read that bill, and it had nothing to do with what Prags and Pro Water sent. It also really had nothing to do with the action you took a couple weeks ago to just simply change the formation vote. And so I would request just a very simple item, and that is that you formally withdraw your support, because it sounds like Cacho is interested in continuing to carry it unless he hears something formal. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Steinbeck. Mr. Brown, followed by Gwen Pelfrey.
Mike Brown, representing CoLab. Two matters this morning. The first, I think at this point it's clear that everybody understands that the premises of the urgency ordinance moratorium in the Paso Basin is wrong, and that you ought to agendize that and talk about rescinding the thing. Secondly, there's an agenda management issue this morning, and that is that item 45 has got sort of two parts. One involves the draft proposed ag offset matter, which is quite extensive.
Mr. Brown, we will take comment on item 45, so if you could confine yourself to items not on the agenda, please.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm speaking to the agenda structure itself and not the substance of it. And we just request you bifurcate that matter and treat it as two items, one on the very extensive draft proposal 47 page.
Consider the vast diversity of the basin. You can address the specific areas that are in need that we might call they have a crisis, but it is not the entire Paso Robles groundwater basin. We should start to actually address, correct the areas that are having difficulty because of the varied lenses, the varied water levels. Not everything is at the same level of severity. So start working on the solutions. You had a Blue Ribbon Committee that worked for 2 years. They had 96 solutions, and instead we started focusing on just the basin. Let's start looking at what action actually fixes the problem. Had we been doing that, we would have had a 2-year head start. We would have been ahead of the drought. So rather than just focus on the district, I ask that you withdraw your support and that you continue to give the public the ability to comment on having this item on a Board of Supervisors agenda, since we know you're going to have to work and talk about it. Let's not have it happen as it did last time in the letter that came from Cacho, and it kind of became a last minute. Oh, we should ask the public what they think. So you've had two citizens, didn't converse with each other, just had to see what's come down from Sacramento to say the special legislation is getting too complicated, it's getting beyond what we wanted, what we expected. Step back, work on solutions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pelfrey. Mr. Pelfrey, followed by Robert Brown.
Morning, Bill Pelfrey, Templeton. Well, I find myself following my wife again. 2453, the Water District. You know, that thing has so many problems with it. You've invested a great deal of money in doing this, and now it's blowing up all over the place. There are several things that are wrong with it. You have no information, no solid information. I've come up here many times and talked about the various aquifers and lenses and pools or whatever, and you've not done anything about it. Instead, you've invested money in forming a water district where you could have actually been doing something for your districts. Now, I've talked to you about we no longer have the beaver, but we can do what the beaver did with bladder dams and acquire water, harvest water, if you will, from rain. Right now, we don't have rain, but plan for the future so you have a place to stockpile it. Instead, you've gone ahead with this water district, spent all this time and money, and done absolutely zero. Now, when five people who are elected to a board are supposedly to put on a task to do something, I, as a citizen, expect you to do it, not to figure out how to control it. Or is that the point? Is it what I said that first day? It's not about water, it's control. Are you really planning on doing anything, or are you just going to harvest North County for other areas in the county, such as your intertie? Now, I find it amazing that it says in there for emergencies or other things. Now, the other things also says it's enough water will be there for 27,000 people, which just happens to be the number of residents along the coast area that need additional water. So does that mean the North County is going to be sucked dry for the coastal districts or the South County? I mean, after all, San Luis Obispo brags about having an 11-year supply of water if another drop doesn't fall. And yet we're still giving them money. Why don't you tap into these other things? Or as Ms. Arnold says, why don't you look at Whale Rock? Solve some of these problems instead of trying to overmanage, micromanage everything. Actually do something. See what's out there. See what will work. Harvest the rain. You have all these solutions that you took this water committee and allowed them and yourselves to just look at formation instead of solutions. What good is it without solutions? Last big drought was 20 years ago, and you did nothing, the board did nothing since then. It's time to actually do something. We need you to actually do your job to harvest water. Water is California's biggest need. Don't let us go through this again. You have it in your power. Please use that power. Seriously, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pelfrey. Mr. Brown, our last request to speak.
Good morning. Bob Brown, pastoral resident and a member of the Prags board. As you know, Prags has withdrawn its support for AB 2453 and wasn't done lightly after we had a chance to look at the bill when she made her comments about the additional amendments that were made in Sacramento. If you were to look closely at that, the old term of it's always good to read the bill, you know, to know what's in it. Read carefully what's been amended in that bill. It matches a lot of the Fox Canyon Special Services District that doesn't necessarily apply to us. This needs to be fully vetted by the public. I don't think on behalf of Prags, a private entity should be the ones to do this. The county should take this up and do this. The other thing that's coming is the freight train of Pavley Dickinson. If you read carefully that bill and what's coming, groundwater management will dramatically change rather quickly here if this bill is passed. A lot of this special language that is in AB 2453 matches the Pavley Dickinson bill. We are going to get this whether we want it or not. We now have to look to Supervisor Arnold and we look to Supervisor Meacham to show us the leadership in the North County to take this up and get this district in place. We ask that this be agendized and placed on your agenda as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. That was our last request to speak. Mr. Hill, would you like to comment?
Yeah, I'd like to. We've heard from people on various sides of the issue, but I think it's a good idea to agendize perhaps in 2 weeks a discussion on this. I don't know, quite frankly. I know we're going to have a report on certain things, but I don't know that I think we've spun a lot of wheels and we've spent a lot of time and resources, and I think it would be better for the board to clarify whether we're going to focus on any actual short-term management solutions for the Paso Basin or not. And it does certainly include looking at the bill and making sure that we send a clearer message than we have so far to our assembly member so that we can, you know, I do understand, having read the Prags and Pro Water Equities statements, that they're disappointed and frustrated by the amount of time and resources that they've put into this. And I think in order to be fair to stakeholders who I think have spent a great deal of time trying to bring forth a compromise that mirrors things that people have said are best practices in terms of, you know, self-government, et cetera. And we seem to have gone back on that. And I know our own resources have been spent through our administrative office and our lobbyists and others. I think reaching whatever we can come to in terms of a level of clarity would be helpful on not just that bill, on what it is that we think should be done. My view all along, and this goes back years, to when we certified the level 3 severity in the Paso Basin, which was more than 3 years ago now, was that we really haven't done much to stop the bleeding in Paso. And I know there's a lot of people who think that there is no, and if that's the, if the view of the board is that there's nothing that should be done, nothing that can be done, and it's all about long-term things, which capital projects and other things, you know, take years and millions of dollars, if that's the only route that we will look at, then I think we should make that clear rather than running everybody ragged and having them come back to square one. So I would request that we have something agendized for 2 weeks from now.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hill. Ms. Arnold?
Yes. So where will I start here? We heard from Mr. Brown, and I'm happy he was here today, this bill has been constantly changing in Sacramento, but I just want to point out that, you know, saying that we, the board, took control of the bill, I want to go back in time and say two groups, PRAGS and Pro Water Equity, two groups, and for the public listening, I mean, I think it's a fair and good question. You all do your homework. Go find out who the people are. These are two private groups that came forward during a drought and said, we have an idea to form a water district. Fair enough. Good enough. But there are thousands of people that own property within the boundaries of this proposed water district that was proposed by the two small groups of people. So then we fast forward. The district that was proposed, in the normal course, the normal process would be that it would go through our LAFCO, and as it was originally proposed, 30 large landowners, many of whom paid a water district and include their own property or others that agreed with the district. But in this case, 30 large landowners voting yes, potentially 4,000 plus voting no, and the yeses win. We had to change that. So all along, I was opposing. Oh, and then we'll go back to the fact that it wasn't us. It was PRAGS and Pro Water Equity, the authors of the district's proposal, that asked for special legislation. Special legislation is pretty serious, because when you create any district, water or anything, and take it to Sacramento for special legislation, it's very hard to undo. Because if you ever change your mind.
I would gently, if I could, interrupt you, Ms. Arnold. Our council is getting a little bit concerned about the length of discussion.
All right. I felt like I was responding directly to the comment. Well, okay, I'll change it. I get it.
Intent to agenda.
Yep, okay. So I think my point is that this was never our intention. It wasn't us taking to Sacramento. So I do not feel that it is appropriate for us to agendize it again and take a look at things that are out of our control. This has been taken by these folks out of our control into Sacramento. Yes, they did out
of
a lot.
Point of order, Mr. Chair.
And so, again, in terms of the question here.
Okay,
really,
let's ask counsel. I'm responding exactly to a speaker. Am I supposed to stop talking now?
Yes, Rita Neal, County Council. The Brown Act does allow for board members to make brief responses to the public comment, but we have to be really cautious about going too far afoul.
Okay.
I think there is perhaps an appropriate discussion about whether the board wants to put this on a future agenda, and you could direct staff.
I'll keep my comments to that
one, and then we need to be cautious about keeping the discussion somewhat brief.
Okay, so I'm allowed to discuss putting this on the agenda or not?
Sure, and I think you can certainly, as I said, briefly respond to the public comments as well, which is appropriate.
Okay. There were several amendments, including the amendments that I have been proposing, and that is to allow the formation vote to include a fair way for the property owners that are in this proposed boundary to be able to have a fair voice as to whether the district is proposed or not. So, or the district is, I'm all off, the district is, for the people in that own property within the district to have a fair voice in whether the district is actually enacted or constructed. So that being said, many amendments have been added over the course of the last few hearings. But the one that's most important to me is that formation vote has been addressed. And therefore, I think that, you know, let the people vote. They can vote on it now. So I'm good with any amendments that have gone into the bill.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Meacham?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly on this as well. And I have a lot of respect for the folks that worked hard to get this to where it did. Having said that, and I'll continue to work with you if you wish. But the difficulty that I see through this is the process in Sacramento. I read this bill last night four times trying to read through the details of this bill. There's a lot of things in there that weren't there prior that had nothing to do with the decision that we made last meeting that we had. But some of those amendments I couldn't support. I couldn't support in your behalf. So I think that at this point, I don't mind agendizing this, but I want to go back to more of the idea of solutions. Even the water district is not the solution. The water district was going to help assist with those solutions if, in fact, we could get one in place. But I think if we're going to talk about solutions, we need to be more specific about that. And I've laid out a couple of them, and I'm not talking about long term. And hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to the RCD folks today when they come up, because I've met with them. I've met with the Farm Bureau folks and have some ideas about this coming winter. So I'll be happy to agendize this, and I would like to focus more on short-term specifics and then long-term as well. And I'd be more than happy, again, to work with you to craft whatever you wish. The difficulty that I have is I don't know when it stops. When do we stop seeing amendments from different committees that come down from Sacramento? We had a legislative platform that went forward. Had we not got the letter, we wouldn't even been in this position. But we are.
Got to move forward. Mr. Hill.
I defer with the understanding that I would like to agendize a discussion of this for the next calendar.
All right. Ms. Raymond.
With regard to whether or not we should agendize this, I definitely think that we should. And I think the biggest reason why is because we are seeing right now a tremendous level of panic. Because that bill went from 3 pages to 17 pages and was seriously amended in a way that none of us, including County Council, has had a chance to really go through and figure out what that is. So I think that we need public input on that as to whether or not we're going to pull it. It was all about public input from the get-go. And secondly, I still think going down the path of the water district is the right solution because
of this bill, unless certain things have happened. The board did not indicate that they support any one provision or position or bit of this legislation. So hearing the discussion on the dais, and I think working with the CAO, we'll ask staff to agendize an item for an analysis of the bill, AB 2453, as amended, and options for this board to take positions on that piece of legislation.
Chairman Gibson, a couple things. One, given the sensitive nature of this issue, I would prefer a motion from your board to agendize this so that we have a formal record.
So moved.
And secondly, if I could, I do want to clarify the motion because it is different than what your board acted on June 17th. I want to make sure that everybody's aware of that. On June 17th, your board passed a motion that stated the legislative platform process would not be followed for this specific legislation, and that any and all inquiries from Sacramento should be distributed directly to your board members individually, and that staff would not have any involvement with this process. So what I just heard is a significant variation from that prior motion, and I want to make sure that we're clear on what staff's role should be in this.
That said, let me ask Mr. Hill, who had made the motion, did you like to clarify what your intent was at this point?
Well, I think Mr. Buckshot raises some important points. You know, I think we need to clarify whether we're going to be whether this board is going to continue to, you know, as we all know, and I really don't agree that trying to weigh in on legislation as it goes through the you know, through the various forms in both houses of the assembly makes a heck of a lot of sense unless we're going to have meetings every single week about this. I'd just like us to go on the record to see whether we're going to continue to support a water district in order to as best as we can form some sort of self-control before the state inevitably moves in to manage groundwater, or we're going to continue to act upon, I think, misinformation, I think selfish agendas, and I think a desire to find excellence and perfection rather than something that might actually be reasonable and good, because I think we spent a lot of time on this. We've spent a lot of other people's time on this. We've spent the assembly members' time on this, and it's best for us to be clear. I certainly don't think we were clear on June 17th, regardless of certain things that were said, and it's better for us to be clear and either move on to other issues or let the leadership happen in a decisive way.
The motion didn't get a second, so I'm gonna declare it dead for lack of a second.
Even know what the motion was, Bruce.
It's a non-issue right now because it didn't get a second. We're gonna go. We have lights on here. We'll get some comment here, and we'll come back and see if someone would like to make a motion. Ms. Arnold.
Yes. First of all, the legislative process the legislative platform that we are talking about is just simply the fact that the staff or the chair are able to make these decisions for us. So if that's what we're talking about, then yes, I think in this sensitive case, we do need to be talking about this publicly and making motions. But on the other hand, I'm to the point now, this is what happens when you take something to Sacramento. You absolutely lose control, local or otherwise. Lots of things can happen to this bill till the very minute it's voted on at the last second on the floor of either house. So what I'm proposing is what I've been after all along. Whatever it looks like at the very end, the people, we have succeeded in putting an amendment into it that says whatever it looks like at the end, the people get to vote on it. And I'm satisfied with that, and I don't think we should chase it around anymore. It's Sacramento business now.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Arnold. Mr. Meacham?
Just a suggestion, if I could. I mean, we keep looking to the North County supervisors to take a look at this. I would be more than happy to sit down with Supervisor Arnold, Assemblyman Asajian, to find out what they actually see as an end product to this bill. Because we can say we either support or don't support. It has no bearing on what they're going to do from an amendment standpoint in different committees. So what I'd like to do is to sit down with the Assemblyman and get a clear picture of where they think this is going. Mr. Buckshy is correct. In the last decision that we made, we had individual input to this. So before I think before we agendize it to have a big meeting to bat this thing back and forth, we need to get clarity from Sacramento on where this is going. Even if this bill is carried forward at this point, are there other amendments that could be proposed from the Senate? Are there other things that can happen? And at what point do we stop this badminton game? So I'd be happy to do that as a committee of the board, to sit down with the Assemblyman and find out where this is going before we agendize it.
Mr. Hill?
On certain grounds, let's just clarify where we're at. If we don't think that a district as proposed originally by the two stakeholder groups is the direction we want to go in, let's make that clear and move on.
Ms. Arnold?
I just want to point out again, it's not our bill. We don't have control of it. The sponsors of the bill now have withdrawn the support because in Sacramento, things have been added in that they that weren't there originally, weren't part of their proposal. It's not our bill. We talk about local control. We have successfully created a situation where the locals do have control. Whatever happens to this proposed water district, they can vote on it, whether it suits their needs or not. It is the ultimate local control, and I say we leave it alone, let the bill go through Sacramento, let the district as proposed will continue down the course. Maybe it won't, but this particular situation, we've succeeded in allowing the landowners to have a voice, and I'm satisfied with that.
Ms. Ray?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that this process is different than any other process that we've gone down this path in terms of legislation and legislative creation. And from the get-go, Assemblyman Asajian asked for this board's input. And it's unusual to ask for that level of input. In fact, this board wasn't even legally required to give input. But we set a kind of an informal structure into place at that time where this board was weighing in. And Assemblyman Asajian told us that if any time this board withdrew its support, he would withdraw his support of the bill. He's the sponsor of the bill, not Prags and Pro Water Equity. It's Assemblyman Asajian's bill. technically speaking. And so that input has been a critical part of the process all along. So right now what I want to see, which I don't know the answer to the question, I want to see an analysis of what this dang thing says at this point, because I don't know. And I can't make a good decision on behalf of the county without knowing the answer to that question. And I'm not willing to surrender and say it's now Sacramento's thing, because again, through the great leadership of Assemblyman Ashajan, we have a voice in a way that we don't normally have it on an issue that is the most pressing issue that this county's dealt with in a decade with regard to Sacramento. So it's a special thing, and we have to treat it that way. So I would like to see us discuss what these amendments are. And until we do that, I can't say I support it or withdraw.
All right.
I don't know.
So Ms. Ray, let me see if I could springboard off of what you just said, because you brought up a couple of very important points. One of them is an analysis of the bill as amended right now. It's expanded considerably. That's a very important thing. Second, you very rightfully point out that this bill is moving forward. It's a very important piece of legislation that affects a very significant chunk of this county, both geographically and economically. And we have our assembly member asking for guidance from this board. And so I would suggest you were very close to a motion.
I was ready to make a motion.
Yeah, and I was just going to suggest and then offer you the floor to do so, that what we're looking at is agendizing. I would suggest in 2 weeks. We have a very open agenda 2 weeks from today. Agendizing an analysis and consideration of a position on AB 2453.
I would make that motion with the specific direction that we have an analysis of whatever amendments are pending at that time.
All right. Do we have a second? I'll second that for purposes of discussion. That seems a very clear action item that we would take up, an analysis of the bill and further discussion of a position of this board, which is important to Mr.
Sajan. When do we stop having staff analyze the various amendments? Because they can happen tomorrow.
I was going to ask.
Well,
they can happen the next day. They can happen a day before. And this board on the 17th seemed to ask staff to basically butt out.
So my understanding of the process is that the bill, as amended, has been put up, and nothing happens until Mr. Ashajan starts discussion with members of the Senate as to how this is going to occur in the floor.
I think it's really important to recognize that this is morphing in front of us. It's not following the normal path, and to stick our head in the sand and say, well, we did something before and whatever, is really short-sighted. We have to continue to participate in this process because that's what we've done from the get-go, from the moment that this was proposed by Assemblyman Ashajan. And this board has participated. And to throw the towel in and say, well, now we're not going to participate anymore, again, is short-sighted. It's a lack of leadership, and we need to show that leadership to this board.
Under discussion, Ms. Arnold.
Yes, please. I do believe I think we need to remember something, and that is that I feel like I am absolutely representing my constituents, the thousands of landowners, and that could happen here locally. So I am happy that we have shown enough leadership that we've gotten to a place where the people actually affected, an unincorporated area of the basin, can vote for a proposed water district that's coming at them. I just say we leave it alone and let it run its course.
Mr. Meacham.
Okay. And, you know, the letters that we've received from Prags and Pro Water that are withdrawing their support for that, I'm not going to support this bill, even with the amendments that have been suggested or even the way it's going forward at this point. They're the ones that crafted this, and if they don't like it, then I can't support it. So I don't know what we're going to discuss, and I think Mr. Hill raises a good point. At what point do we quit analyzing this thing? If it comes back down with these amendments, we go through all of these amendments, it goes back to Sacramento, it really doesn't matter whether we like them or not. If Sacramento wants to put them in there, they're going to put them in there. So I'm just not clear where we're going to go with this whole thing.
So I'd like to get to a vote on this, but basically the motion is to agendize an item for 2 weeks from today that will allow us to hear staff's analysis of
and
the bill.
And public input.
And public input of the bill as it exists, and provide the opportunity for the board to take a position. That board's position can be anything that a majority of this board chooses to make it. So it seems to me that given the complexity of the legislative process and the bill as it stands, it's well worth our time, well worth the county's staff's time on behalf of constituents to give us that analysis and let us direct a statement of position as determined by a majority of the vote board. And with that, I would ask the clerk, seeing no other discussion, unless Mr. Buckshy would like to weigh in. Are you clear on what we're proposing here?
Yes, I am clear, and I was just going to clarify, was there a second on that motion?
Yes, I seconded it for discussion. I would ask then, seeing no further discussion, for a roll call vote, please.
In 2 weeks, that's the July 22nd
meeting, okay. Yes.
Ms. Ray?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
No.
Mr. Hill?
No.
And Ms. Arnold?
No.
So then the question is how do we move forward on a request from Assemblyman Ashaji?
I'm going to reiterate my point about allowing the supervisors of the district to meet with Assemblyman Ashaji and to try to get clarity to this, to see are these the final amendments that are coming down that we can analyze? If this is not, then I'm just going to withdraw support for it altogether. But I'd like to be able to talk to the Assemblyman to find out. I read this stuff last night again three or four times, and there's a lot of stuff in this bill. I'd like to hear from him specifically, number one, how this was crafted, who crafted it, and why, because there's so many different things that have been put into the bill. So if you'll allow that, I mean, I'm not going to make a motion for a meeting until I've had a meeting with the Assemblyman to find that out.
I have a process question.
Yes, Ray.
As we left it on the 17th, the supervisors of the district are free to do that because we were all going, the majority of the board decided that we could individually comment on the bill. So I don't think that takes an action of the board. But then secondly, we can't take an action of support or opposition today because that's a Brown Act issue, isn't it?
Right. So I think what we might need is a bit of a tutorial about the frustrating legislative process in Sacramento. The bill as it stands right now is still subject to amendment, potentially in a good direction. So we can still get something on the agenda for the 22nd. Our meeting next week is pretty full. We would normally set the agenda for the 22nd this coming Monday, which is the 14th. We could, in fact, agendize something as late as perhaps the Friday of that week, a week from this coming Friday, to post on a core agenda to provide opportunity for this board to discuss. So if it's the desire of the supervisors of the basin to meet with Assemblyman Ashajian, and having that motion just fail, I guess that's the way in which things move forward.
I also would like to clarify then that the motion from June 17th about how the legislative process will be handled in the platform, that staff will not have any involvement with this bill from this point forward unless your board directs otherwise. Mm-hmm. I have asked our state lobbyist and Assemblyman Nasajian's staff to simply forward any requests to me, and I will forward them on to the five of you for your individual consideration, and we will not offer up any additional analysis beyond that.
Perfect.
Okay.
Sounds good to me.
Thank you.
With that, we'll take a break. We'll reconvene at 10:30.
Correcting resolution number 2014-56 relative to outdoor water use for the new development water conservation program, districts 1 and 5.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Ms. Griffin.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board, Cami Griffin, County Planning and Building Department. We are here today with just a status report on the urgency ordinance. If I could get that PowerPoint up. As you recall, just under a year ago, your board adopted an ordinance that established a moratorium on new uses that would use water from the Paso Robles groundwater basin. The ordinance required that such new uses offset their total water new water demand by a ratio of 1 to 1. It also required the installation of meters on new wells. It also specified a number of uses that were not subject to the ordinance, and it applied to all areas of the basin except for those within the cities, the San Miguel Community Services District, and the Atascadero sub-basin. So today what we're doing is we're asking you to receive and file a status report on what's been going on in the implementation of that urgency ordinance. We're also asking you to do one action item, and that was the resolution that you adopted relative to the new development offset program. We did find an error in that, so we're asking for you to correct that. With that, we are going to do a multi-person presentation today. We have James Caruso, a senior planner with the department, Cheryl Cochran, a planner with our department, and Laura Edwards and Jeff Berry with the, I'm going to probably get this wrong, Upper Salinas Los Tablas Resource Conservation District. I usually reverse those, so... So we'll all be a part of the presentation today, and with that, I get to kick it off. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the exemptions from the urgency ordinance and what we've been doing relative to implementing those exemptions. So the ordinance specified a number of uses that were simply not subject to the ordinance. It also established an exemption based on vesting right. And back in November of last year, your board actually approved a resolution that established a set of guidelines, criteria that staff would use in reviewing these requests for a vested right exemption to determine if one was able to be granted. It requires a number of mandates, one that a valid well permit and the well drilled or contracted for, that is a requirement in every case, and also that ownership of the property or entering into an agricultural lease. Both of those things are requirements. Those have to be in place prior to the date that the urgency ordinance was originally adopted. That's August 27, 2013. And then you established a set of requirements for both permanent and annual crops, and you required for permanent crops that three out of the four items that are on the slide be met, and for annual crops it was two out of three items. So you had less requirements there. So since August 27th, or actually November 26th, since the time of adoption of that resolution, we've had 32 requests for a vested right exemption. 27 of those have been approved, and then there's a summary on the slide of the types of crops that were approved under those vesting and the number of acres. So total, there's been just over 1,800 acres of vesting approved. Currently, we're seeing a lot of the planting happening right now. This is the time that the growers start to put in their vineyards and orchards, so that these plantings are starting to occur today. However, a number of the vestings were granted for crop that not only are going to go in this season, but also next planting season. So we'll also see some additional acreage based on these approvals next year. Recently, we've seen less of the large acreage requests for vesting exemptions. Instead, what we've seen are these smaller acres. So these are the parcels that are 20 acres or less in size. Your board did set a separate standard for those, and that just is the two required mandates, that the well be either drilled or contracted for prior to the urgency ordinance adoption date, and that ownership be in place. So really in the last 3 or 4 months, we have seen more of the small lot, the 20 acres or less. The other part of the ordinance is the requirement for offset, and this is the requirement to offset their new water use on a one-to-one basis. And we have two types of these, new development and agricultural. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Cheryl Cochran, who's going to talk about the new development.
But we are watching that and just keeping track because it could possibly mean that fewer retrofits are required in order to get to enough gallon credits. So far, one applicant has purchased 280 credits, or the amount to offset one single-family dwelling. So there are currently 1,603 credits available for purchase. The county has sent 900 postcards advertising the program to potentially qualifying homes, and those are homes that were built prior to 1994 when the before the 1.6 gallon per flush toilets were required. We do have an additional 16 homes on the retrofit interest list. So far, we've received positive customer feedback. We do follow up via phone calls with everyone who receives a retrofit. People have been satisfied with the toilets and with the plumber's work so far. We haven't received any complaints. We have also been keeping track of the number of permits that are in process in the Paso Robles groundwater basin area. Right now we have 2 guest houses, 2 secondary units, and 23 single-family dwellings. And these are permits that have started the process, but have not yet purchased their offset credits. Based on the standard amounts, 35 gallons per day for a guest house, 195 for a secondary unit, and 280 for a single-family dwelling. If all of the permits use this standard amount and all these applicants purchase credits, the program will need an additional 5,492-gallon credits. This is not including permits submitted between now and when the ordinance expires in August of 2015. So depending on the savings per home, this could mean that we need to retrofit about an additional 120 additional homes. We will continue to monitor where these permits are in process, and we'll continue to direct the consultant to complete more retrofits as necessary. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cochran.
Thank you. So the other kind of offset is an agricultural offset, and before we introduce the RCD to talk about the program that they're developing. We have been issuing agricultural offsets based on water duties established in the water basin report. And so this is a summary of the number of offset clearances that staff has issued so far. There have been 12 requests. As you can see, there's a number of different crops that have been retired and a number of different crops proposed, primarily, though, vineyard. And there's been a total of about 900 acres approved for offset clearances. As you recall, your board did authorize staff to work with the Upper Salinas Las Tablas Resource Conservation District to develop an ag water offset program. And they're currently, the RCD is currently presenting their draft program that they're going to talk to you about today to stakeholder groups for review and comment. And we hope to have a final program in front of your board in October for approval by resolution. And with that, I'd like to introduce Laura Edwards, who's the project manager from the Resource Conservation District.
Ms. Edwards.
Good morning, supervisors, administration, Madam Clerk. We're pleased to be here to share our progress to date on the offset program. As a side note, we've been on tour with the program with stakeholder groups and outreach. So for purposes of consistency, what I'd like to do is give you the same presentation. So put on your landowner hats, and we'll be coming from that perspective. As you know, the County Planning Department contacted the RCD. Oh, second slide. Here we go. To create this program. The goal and objective of the water offset program is to provide a framework for San Luis Obispo County to process new applications for irrigated ag within the Paso Basin. A little more background to consider is the most basic reason for the ordinance, and that is that we're in severe decline. In the state and in the county, at current production levels, it is strongly believed that we will not be able to sustain water demand for the future, and that we have reached safe perennial yield levels in the basin, which excludes the Atascadero subbasin. One of the methods and solutions for addressing that is the offset program. I'd like to emphasize that it is one of the solutions possible to maintain the problem at this level, and severe decline in interest in more localized solutions is why the RCD board decided to help by way of the offset program design. So So due to the complexity of the issue, the RCD pulled a team of specialists to assist in the draft program standards, or the program provides a framework for the following types of crops or situations: crop conversions, new irrigated acreage, increased crop density, rootstock conversions, and rural groundwater uses not included in the county's domestic program. We're going to come back to this map in just a few minutes. I've inserted it twice, so for time's sake, we'll skip there. What I'd like to do really quickly is go through the flow of the program. It is a very complex process, and I feel like this flow chart might help us simplify the understanding of how the program works. So as an applicant comes in, they're going to follow this process. First, they need to determine the amount of water credit, and they'll do that by using the current crop acreage, multiplying that by the water use factor. Then we'll go into determining the potential acres of new crop. And then we need to look at the well impact proximity issue. And so there's four different categories there. There's same property, same well, same property, different well, contiguous parcel, or non-contiguous altogether. And the flow chart goes on to the next slide. To show that if it's same property, same well, pretty straightforward process. They go right to being granted clearance, and it goes right into their deed restriction for recordation, and a well meter is installed, and then there's annual verification to ensure that they're meeting their committed levels of water. Otherwise, if it's same property, different well, you see, or contiguous parcel, non-contiguous parcel, they go through a little bit of a different process: proximity analysis, neighboring well impact analysis, and then back down to deed restriction. A lot of what we have done has, well, and you asked us to do this too in January, supervisors, use existing data to the extent possible to be as economic as we could be on the process. So for our water requirements in the program, we have relied heavily and solely on the Master Water Report from 2012. A lot of great work went into this, 2,000-page document, and we've put it to good use. I have the website up here for those in the audience who would like to know more about where we get the water requirement numbers that are to come. Move on to that. This is the crop water calculation, fun stuff. Before I answer the question, in the flow chart that I wanted to talk about the water requirement, let me quickly back up to explain how the water requirement numbers were developed in the Master Water Report. The Food and Ag Org of the United Nations, the FAO, presents a procedure for estimating crop evapotranspiration in irrigation and drainage paper number 56. California DWR, UC Extension, Cal Poly ITRC, and the Slow Master Water Report all use the same methodology. It's solid. This equation is performed for each crop in the basin, entering low values in all of those categories and high values in all of those categories. And what we've done is we've come up with the median for this program. So those are the table, those are the numbers we'll be using, and you'll see that in the next slide. But real quick, I want to note that crop water use is influenced by variability in weather parameters, crop characteristics, management practices, and other environmental factors. So as a result, naturally, a precise number for crop water requirement will be difficult to determine, and we recommend, as I mentioned, that a median value be used for each crop category. Real quickly, just want to show you what the crop groups are. Every crop in this county fits into one of those categories. And we added small grains and strawberries to the Master Water Report groupings list because they're so unique and they didn't fit well into the other categories based on their water needs. That's strawberries and small grains again. Okay, so here is the crop water requirement numbers for the offset program. If you're in any of these crops, the number on the right is the acre feet per acre per year allotment that you'll be getting. And so this chart does illustrate that median crop water number. Also, as noted, this includes two additional crops, crop values, previously focused groups requested, as I mentioned, due to their specificity in water use, strawberries and small grain. Based on the types of projects to be considered, an offset program was determined to be feasible if standards for water use were adopted rather than relying on individual water use information provided by landowners using all sorts of varying calculation methodologies. Established standards for crop water use are necessary because of the number of variables that are involved, such as soils, evapotranspiration rates, water year, types, geographic variability, et cetera, that would increase the complexity of the program to the extent that it is unworkable and require a great deal of specialty expertise to manage, quite expensive as well. So, again, thank you to our peer reviewer. Okay, so moving down the flow of the program, now we're going to talk a little bit more about how we determine the potential acres of new crop. The aforementioned water chart explained how we got our water credit, which is, as an example, 100 acres of vegetables at 1.9 per acre is 190 acre feet per acre per year. We use the same method for determining what the new crop conversion would need. So an example would be 100 acres, say a vineyard times 1.7 would be 170 acre feet per acre per year. So you can imagine we spend a lot of time analyzing the crops, the needs, the crop water requirements, where the crops currently are, what those microclimates look like. And for spatial reference, we feel like this map really helps you kind of see what we've been looking at, which is where the concentration of farming is in the Paso Robles groundwater basin, and what types of crops those are, what the needs are going to be, where the conversion factor potential is going to be. It's a really interesting slide. So we thought if you start with alfalfa, you could have some crop water savings if you went into the different sub-areas and you looked at citrus, deciduous, nursery, pasture, vegetables, and vineyard, and you converted from alfalfa to those crops, what kind of acreage conversion potential would you get? As you can see on the bottom, 1,782 in citrus, 910 in deciduous, 1,640 in nursery, 683 in pasture, which I crossed out because that's not a very efficient way to go. Vegetables, 2,156. And vineyard, 1,951 potential acres of conversion still left to be had. So based on this, we found the program quite feasible. In simplified steps, because it can seem kind of complex as we keep going, this is really what we're doing. You start with the project type. You either have a crop conversion or you have new irrigated ag. Type of credit, again, it's either a crop conversion or you're fallowing land, creating a credit. Offset location, it's either the same property or it's an adjacent or different property. Taking that one step further, we simplify this into a tiered system. So in step one, determining the water credit. Step two, determine new crop acreage. Step three, assessing impacts to wells. And four, checking the proximity. So here are we have a tiered approach for the well proximity analysis. I'm going to turn this over to Jeff Berry, our hydrogeologist, to explore with you a little further.
Thank you, Laura. Hello, everybody.
And Mr. Berry, no need to lean to the microphone. It picks you up just fine.
Perfect.
Just
thank you.
Project, yeah.
You should have told me that.
You were on a roll, and I didn't want to. Okay. You're fine, too.
All right. Well, proximity or location of the offset credit relative to where the new well serving the new uses is really important because we want to make sure that credit actually is benefiting the aquifer or offsetting that impact from the new pumping. We also want to keep in mind that when you put in new wells or you increase pumping at a well, you have the potential to impact your neighbors, existing neighboring wells. So we wanted to include those two important elements in our program. So here we have the basic approach. We've developed this tiered approach, as Laura discussed, category 1 through 4, with higher standards for progressively more complex projects, category 4 being the most complex. We're analyzing impacts to neighboring wells. We're also considering both the vertical and horizontal conditions. We want to make sure you're in the same hydrologic strata so that we're not talking about pumping from shallow as an offset to pumping deep, for example. And then we have well metering of all participants in the program and with verification by a third party. These are some key elements. Just roll that thing the other way. There you go. All right. So as Laura mentioned, we have the four criteria, the four categories across the top. Simplest, same property, same well, and getting more complex for the next one. So the category one offset is the same land, the same well, same owner. Very simple process. We don't have to even worry about proximity of the credit to the proximity of the new well serving that use. Category two is the same land, but we're going to start pumping a different well or we drilled a new well. Now, that has the potential to impact the neighboring well, so we're concerned about that. Category three, it's really the same as category two, except that adjacent property is owned by somebody else. So we need to make sure there's a contract in place and there are deed restrictions in place. Category four is the most complex. We're talking about a different property that's providing that offset credit, different owner, different well. And so we needed to come up with some criteria for evaluating, okay, what's the reasonable your new pumping well, and how, you know, basically that cone of depression extends out laterally some distance. We can calculate that fairly straightforwardly. It's a, you know, the cone is basically deepest at the pumping well and extends laterally. And the idea is that if your offset credit well lies within the radius of that area of influence from the well that's now being pumped, it seems logical to say that credit would potentially offset that impact from pumping within a reasonable time frame. So we want to make sure the crediting well, where the offset credit is coming from, falls within that radius. I like to use pictures and drawings. You know, this is a fairly complex process, but we've tried to simplify it. And here's a basic diagram. We're showing a new well serving the new use in the middle. To the left is a neighboring well. To the right is a well that an applicant is bringing as an offset credit well. And as you can see, below the section line, there is a horizontal blue line that represents the static water level under non-pumping condition. And you can see when we start pumping that new well serving the new use, there's a cone of depression that forms that spreads out laterally, okay, some distance. And so we've developed some criteria around this for the radius that's acceptable for where the distance that offset credit can be. And we've also set some criteria for the neighboring well impacts. Let's go to the next one. All right. So, yeah, let's just go to this slide. So after consultation with a number of folks and based on professional judgment, we came up with a couple of different criteria for what we consider to be significant impacts caused by water level drawdown in both domestic wells and irrigation wells as a result of pumping this new well or this well that's increasing its use. So for domestic wells, which are more sensitive generally, they're shallower, the pumps are shallower, they generally are lower yielding wells, we've said if you produce 15 feet of additional water level decline at your neighbor's well, that's unacceptable. Likewise with irrigation wells. Now, these wells are generally deeper. They're larger diameter. They can accommodate. The pumps are deeper. So we've, you know, in general in the basin, if you produce, you know, more than 30 feet of drawdown at that location, that's considered to be significant impact also because you're potentially reducing the yield of that well or you're causing increased cost of pumping. So lastly here, you see that credit well or the location where you're planning to fallow the ground and pump that well less needs to be within that cone of depression where there's at least 2 feet of drawdown. We felt like 2 feet was a measurable quantity of drawdown to be able to look at. Go to the next slide. Okay. By the way, we have developed some what we consider to be simple-to-use calculators that will be placed on the county website. These calculators require some very basic information, like what subarea is the well located in that you're planning to pump? What aquifer unit are you in? Are you in the shallow unit that's, say, 200 feet or shallower, or are you in something deeper in the Paso Robles formation? And essentially, you just enter the flow rate and the hours of pumping. The calculator does everything else. It references all the published information available right now, anyway, on the aquifer parameters, the permeability, the storativity, things like that are already selected for you. So it's very basic to use. We set it up that way so the county staff can use it or applicants can use it and understand what is that radius and how much drawdown am I going to cause at neighboring wells. Another criterion that we established is that it, based on the premise that we don't want to increase pumping within what we already all acknowledge is severe groundwater depletion area, where we, you know, where we have basically this map that's been published. This is an example, a sample. This was the map that was published last August that showed the severe decline areas, red being the most severe decline areas. And so we don't want to encourage moving credits from the areas outside of that red area into the red area to allow increases in pumping, right? It's just that doesn't make sense. So basically we're recommending to the county that a severe depletion area be defined based on, and we've recommended, 50 feet of water level decline. So that represents pretty much that deep red area that you see there on the map. In that case, you would not be able to, an applicant would not be, that resides in that area would not be able to bring a credit from outside that area into it. Now we do think that it's fine if you find another credit within the red area to move to your well in the red area. That's fine. We're also trying to encourage and come up with some incentives to allow people that are now pumping in the red area.
Oops, I went back the other way. Okay, so to finish out the flow of the program, we go to deed restriction, recordation, and well meter installation. Before a project can receive clearance, proof of offset trade must be recorded in the property deed and proof of a well flow meter installed. Annual verification would be essential, and due to the newness of the program and need to verify actual water use at year's end, the program must encompass an annual third-party verification process as a clearance renewal step. That's our recommendation. So next steps, the RCD is refining program framework and defining associated language to weave all of these different technical pieces together and support them with the policy language that county will need to facilitate this program. Our education and outreach next steps, we continue through September, as you can see, and this is where our energy is going. Final program presented to you for adoption, estimated October. And in conclusion, the program is designed to be flexibly tiered, simplified, and user-friendly. The issue is very complex because there are any number of scenarios from landowners out there that are going to come in and to make it possible for us to facilitate each of those unique situations. We had to make a program that was flexible enough to handle those complexities. And lastly, groundwater basins are natural features that change over time, and the program is designed with that flexibility and adaptation in mind. We'd like to open it up for questions at this time.
Thank you. I was thinking that would be a good idea. Mr. Meacham is punched in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great work that you guys have done on this. And I read your report over the weekend and made my head spin around in circles looking at these equations.
You find yourself leaning forward into microphones.
I do,
after
yes.
That.
I won't grab a hold of it, though. I want to go back to the issue of the deed restriction and transferring water from, let's say, the red zone to the outside area. Are there time limits that you're suggesting on this that would show, let's say, for example, that things improve in another sub-basin area that has not had or has a decline? And would they be allowed to get those water credits back at some point, or is this in perpetuity?
Okay. So when I look at this program, I look at that red map and how that's going to be updated annually. That will be dynamic, and it will show as recovery happens and where movement can go back and forth between credits in the basin. But I think if you're going to, at this point, in the severe decline era that we're in, the foreseeable future, you would want to keep something like this in place. And again, like the deed restriction, the transaction gets placed in the deed so that it can go with the sale of the property. And because really, you're talking about a balance, a one-to-one offset.
once you lose track of that, you lose the effectiveness of the program. So it kind of needs to live on and support. And if we got 20 straight years of great rain and you didn't need this program anymore, that would be fantastic. But we get a lot of those theoretical questions, and we just have to keep saying, look, for the time being, we have to create a program based on today's climate conditions and water holding conditions.
And I understand.
I probably didn't answer your question. I'll let Jeff try.
I understand the concept completely, and I understand what we're trying to accomplish. I guess what I'm wondering is how we're going to be able to request or require somebody to put a deed restriction on something without the ability to get it back if they ever at some point want that. I don't know how that works.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
I'm not an expert on deeds, but, you know, the idea is to make this flexible. And so if the offset credit no longer applies, if they have no longer access to that land that's providing the credit, then they'd obviously have to verify that they were no longer going to increase their groundwater use that was supported by that credit, and they'd have to then go through a process of having the deed restriction removed.
I see.
Supervisor Ray, I heard Ms. Griffin speak up on this particular issue.
I was going to suggest that perhaps County Council could also provide you some information on covenants and deed restrictions.
Ms. McDonald.
Thank you. This is Whitney McDonald with the County Council's office. I do think that there could be a mechanism written into the deed restriction or the covenants that would allow them to be lifted once a set of circumstances occur, and it could be tied to board action, let's say declaring the stage three water restrictions lifted, or some other type of objective, clear direction from the board, and then at that point the deed restriction go through the work again of trying to figure out, is it appropriate for the restriction to be renewed, or do we need people to come back in and apply all over again and take a fresh look at it? What happens to the people who are using the credit? Do they then have to stop irrigating? And so those are all considerations. I think that we could write into the deed restriction some set of contingencies. It's just a matter of what do you want those contingencies to look like, and then what do you want people to do or not do after a certain set of events happens.
Mr. Chairman, to add on to that, when your board takes action relative to establishing the level of severity associated with the resource management system, there are a set of steps that have to occur, including a resource capacity study. So simply having rain wouldn't necessarily change that LOS number that's presented to you biennially as part of the RMS report. There would have to be the process that would go through. So let's say we've had a bunch of good years of rain and your board requested that a new resource capacity study be completed, and that did change the level of severity from 3 to 1. That could, for instance, be one of those circumstances that would automatically release that deed restriction then.
One another, if I could, Cammie, on that point. Will the modeling that has been put in place, will that be able to assist this program in terms of that level of severity?
Courtney Howard from our Public Works Department is here, and I think she's probably better equipped to answer that than I am.
Thank you.
Ms. Howard?
Good morning. Courtney Howard, County Public Works. So the model for the Paso Robles groundwater basin can be used as a tool for managing the basin over the long term. So as we're looking at the objectives we want to have for the basin, what condition we want to see it in over time, and what needs to be done to achieve that condition, I'm thinking that was what came to my mind in terms of the contingencies to look at. You know, at some point you either bring in new water to balance the basin, or you maybe it's a combination of demand management and new supplies. But to me, that seems like the trigger as we're continuing working on managing the basin over time. That might come forward to address that.
Thank you, Courtney.
Supervisor Ray, and then I'd like to hop in here.
A couple questions. This is for County Council, and you're going to have to channel Tim McNulty right now for me. something we've been dealing with in District 4 is deed restrictions and with regard to financing and FHA. And so I'm concerned about us entering into deed restrictions here and hamstringing the ability to get financing in real estate transactions relative to the deed restrictions here. So I don't want to see us, I mean, I want to see that piece entered into in this discussion because it has become an issue in this county that most people aren't aware of yet. And we want to make sure that we don't introduce a whole set of things that complicate that process while we're trying to untangle it right now.
I think luckily on that specific issue, I hope it wouldn't create a problem because in this situation, I don't anticipate that the deed restriction would allow the county to come in and or a third party to come in and affect the mortgage itself and the mortgage holder's interest in the property, but it's kind of hard to tell exactly the way the FHA would interpret its regulation.
Well, the deed restriction would still be there in the case of a transfer of property, right?
Correct.
So that's where we would run into the problem, wouldn't it?
Correct. Because in that specific instance, there's a regulation that has been interpreted to apply to basically any kind of covenant,
mm-hmm.
Which you put the word covenant or restriction in there, and then you're going to raise some red flags potentially. It
right.
just depends on how they are going to interpret the words on the page that is recorded against their own regulation that's in place. But I think we could work, and we are working with the FHA to try to come up with some tweaks to the language in the recorded documents that could enable them to be deemed consistent with the regulation. And so we could add some language into a deed restriction that could be recorded in these situations to address, you know, the desire to not impede sale or financing. It's really just in order to ensure control over the irrigation practices on the property.
Right. Now, my only point is that we want to make sure that we don't neglect that piece of the puzzle.
I think that's a really good point, Supervisor Ray. And I think it's also important to, you know, on the flip side of that, I think there are some purchases happening where there is no water. And when they, shortly after they purchase the property, they're finding out the well is dry. So I think this is also a safety mechanism for the county that will transfer the water use data from.
Referring to in that strata is if you're in a different geologic unit. Most of the shallow wells that are 200 feet and shallower are completed in the sand and gravel deposits in the vicinity of the floodplain. Okay, they're in a different aquifer unit called alluvium than exists in the Paso Robles formation, which is deeper. So we want to make sure that when an offset credit well, if you're planning to fallow ground, if it's serving that, if it's being pumped out of that shallow alluvium near the river, isn't going to offset a deep well
oh,
that's pumping
see.
Out of the Paso Robles. So there's kind of a general check on where is that well pumping from? Not is it 200 feet
okay.
versus 600 feet, you know, in the Paso Robles formation?
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
So I'd like to jump in at this point. First of all, there's a lot more work to be done on this. This is a work in progress. You're doing stakeholder outreach. It occurs to me that especially on these technical issues, running this by the RAC, the Water Resources Advisory Committee, is a necessary step in this, and I would assume that my colleagues agree with that. Let me just offer a little bit of feedback. I have Supervisor Arnold's light on as well, and then I know we have a little more staff report to do, and we have public comment, and we'll talk a little bit about time management at that point. The question of a deed restriction, first and foremost, it's a voluntary action. You know, anyone entering into this needs to think very carefully about whether they're going to restrict uses on their property. That's a personal decision. And whether the deed restriction comes and goes, I think we have to keep in mind the bigger picture of safe yield, which is a long-term concept, and that we can only withdraw a finite amount of water out of this basin. Now, how that water is distributed is going to be a matter of our governance structure, of our AB 3030 plan, of our demand management features within that. And so I think the question of whether deed restrictions come and go really has to be looked at in that larger concept, along with the governance structure that's going to run that. Talked about the RAC. Of particular interest to me are two things regarding the new pumping, and one is the very strict verification that the amount of water being used does not exceed the amount that we're expecting and that we have offset it properly. But more importantly, is the effect on other wells, and not of the same property. And as you work through this, I think there's a discussion that should be had as to, you talked about 15 feet of drawdown or 30 feet of drawdown. Well, what if 15 feet of drawdown on a neighboring well dries it up? And, does that should come into play. What if that is a domestic well and that 15 feet of drawdown leaves very little water in that well? So, again, as you proceed, those are issues that I think need – I don't think we need to hash those out today, but I think as you work through this process, those are ones that I think are important.
We have begun the process of sort of fleshing out the semantics of how the policy is going to work. If we need to sit down with county and run through those scenarios together. But I think Jeff does have a little bit of early feedback for you already on that.
Yeah, that's an important consideration because, we might end up with a well that we've made an assumption about where the pump is or where the screen is, and we have no idea. Right. So part of the program involves the applicant through the county basically noticing property owners in the vicinity within a mile that this action is going to occur, and we're asking them to provide very specific information about their wells so that the county or whoever's managing this can evaluate that issue. Where's your pump set? Where's the top of screen? Where's your water level? So that if we have more specific information available to us like that, we'll definitely refer to that. And that's actually in the report right now.
Right. So from a policy level, what I'm asking for is make sure we're touching base with the realities on the
ground. Got it.
Good. Ms. Arnold?
And I just had some of the same concerns, but first I want to thank you. Is this the most challenging project, Laura, that you've ever, by far, taken on? So many variables, and Jeff, I know we've talked about it too, so many variables. I appreciate you taking this on. And I thank Supervisor Ray for bringing up the deed restrictions. There's so many legal concerns that I have about that as well, and it even goes into the appraised value of particular properties, especially the farm banks where property can be utilized for this or that, although I know that it's not pioneered territory and that we have deed restrictions for conservation easements on agricultural grounds. I'm sure you have at least something to start with of how we line all that out. But my other thought was just about the I appreciate your concern for flexibility, because as we move forward, we see it in the Central Valley where there's not good groundwater at all, yet we have very productive agricultural land, and that is because there's the ability to bring water from somewhere else to the farm fields. So we'll have something built in that permanent plantings or irrigated crops can be put in should the landowner be able to. And I specifically, it comes to mind that Jerry Lohr recently, and I have a
presentation, please.
Great, good. I have
thank you
point.
Very much. Ms. Edwards, appreciate it.
So very quickly, we did want to report on enforcement of the urgency ordinance. We've received approximately 15 or so complaints. We found that most of these properties were already approved for continued planting through a vested right exemption. There were a number that were outside the basin, and we're following up on about 5 complaints. We feel in most of these instances we'll be able to either approve the new plantings through an offset clearance or through, in some cases, they're small lots, they're less than 20 acres, so it's just a matter of providing that information to us about wells and ownership. And the last part of the presentation is about the ordinance amendments that your board has authorized that we process, and with that, I'll turn it over to James Caruso.
All right, thank you, Ms. Griffin. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, James Caruso, Department of Planning and Building. Just wanted to quickly remind your board that back in March, you directed the department to work on some water programs to be applied to various areas of the county. We are working towards drafts of those. We're going out with stakeholder outreach. We were at a lab last night to talk about water waste, for instance. Then in May, you expanded your authorization to expand the incentive-based program for outdoor water use, landscape water use. Those are things we're working on. We hope to bring some of the everything's relative, easier ones to your board or less time-intensive ones to your board, hopefully by the end of the year, if not shortly after the first of the year. And then finally, the one piece of action that needs to be taken in the resolution that set up the new development offset program, we had a typo in there where you see in red we used the 180 gallons. Well, that was supposed to be 170 gallons. And because it's arithmetic, it's numbered based, we need to have that corrected. So we're recommending that your board correct that resolution by adopting the corrected text in the attachment. So receive and file the status report, and staff recommends approval of the correcting resolution.
All right. Very good. Ms. Griffin, is that...
That would conclude staff's comments, unless we can answer any questions.
Very good. We have Ms. Arnold's light on.
Yes, and I just wanted to confirm, I guess with James, that the presentation we saw from RCD applied to the urgency ordinance, which is a temporary ordinance, but what you're talking about just now, amending those ordinances, we're not talking temporary. We're talking permanent ordinance.
Yes, correct.
Okay, I wanted to clarify that. And then, that's all I had.
Okay, any other questions? All right, well, we're ready to open it to the public. Let me just talk a little time management here. We're at 11:26 at this point, and we have three other items to go. We are going to be coming back in the afternoon because one of our folks receiving an honorary proclamation was expecting to be there. I have 11 requests to speak, so a little over half an hour of public comment. And I know that one of the items is a road impact fee appeal from Templeton, and I wonder if Ms. Condon is in the. So the calculus is this: we've got half an hour public comment and then board deliberation. If you're under time constraints, I'm sure my colleagues would be happy to stay at the conclusion of this item to get to yours, or if you'd like to go have a nice lunch and relax, we'll be back here at 1:30 and we'll take yours up in the order that it's on the agenda, and it's up to you. Okay. So with that then, for staff's benefit, we're going to trail the three remaining items of the morning, resolution on service charges in various county service areas, the hearing on the road appeal, and the auction on county property in Cambria until we reconvene at 1:30, and they'll occur right after we do the presentation.
And then we also have the added item 49, the emergency contracts for the NASI pipeline.
49 was approved by consent.
Great. Okay.
So with that, we'll open it to the public on the item before us right now. We'll start with Cindy Steinbeck, followed by Mike Brown.
Cindy Steinbeck, Paso Robles. Thank you for the opportunity again to speak and for the work that you've done, RCD. As you know, however, my family and a lot of other people believe that the urgency ordinance flipped the law upside down. So we're actually challenging that. So I'm coming from the premise that the urgency ordinance is unlawful. Vested Rights lives just on the other side of the road from the city limits, and a huge golf course and resort and botanical gardens is going in exactly across the street from a person that was just denied vested rights. And I'm really challenged by that, because the law upside down means an inequity that is so challenging. And agriculture, if everything that's being talked about is implemented today, the face of agriculture in the North County is going to change forever. And these types of things never go away. We can tweak them and so forth. But if we could take a deep breath, are we truly in a shortage? So many good people are looking at resources and ways to fix big problems, while a huge contingent in the Paso Robles groundwater basin, we've got investment groups from around the world that want to sell storage space and want to sell water. And this is an inequity that family farmers like me are not going to be able to reconcile. So I just beg you to really look at the big picture and really use common sense as we change the face of agriculture in perpetuity. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Steinbeck. Mr. Brown, followed by Ted Gilbert.
Mike Brown, representing CoLab. Could staff pop up slide 11, PowerPoint slide 11? We think you ought to bring this back. Let the RCD staff and the planning staff go out and do this road show and get everybody's input and not wait till October. But once they're done, come back in August or whenever and do a gut check on this, because this is a very complicated, costly, and probably aggravating process. We thought maybe you could test yourselves, and here would be a deal for the board, that you would be trained to work these formulas. And remember, each of those factors there has its own math and work. And once you were trained, you board members would go across the hall to the EU training facility, and you'd take a test. And you'd each process four applications, and you'd have an independent grader. And if you could work the applications in the time that planning says somebody ought to be able to work them and be provided all the data and then get graded independently, if you get the right answer, okay, maybe you want to do this. But if you don't get the right answer, maybe you ought to do something else, because this is what you're imposing on your constituents here, that they must go through this very laborious, convoluted, aggravating, and subjective process. You can imagine the back and forth between the planning staff and some poor applicant here, you know, just looking at all those slides today and what's involved in this. And already the attitude that's built into this at the very end, page 47 of the 47-page report, there's a footnote. And that footnote reads, upon receipt of an application package, a 60-day review period will commence. If an application is denied, the applicant has 30 days to revise and submit. An application that's denied after resubmittal will have a one-year waiting period to reapply. Note, applications will become null and void if not issued within 6 months, and the applicant will need to resubmit and repay fees. What a triple jeopardy process. And I don't know where that idea comes from in that footnote, but it betrays how awful this experience can be.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Mr. Gilbert, followed by Paul Clark.
Mr. Chairman, Board of Supervisors, I would like to go back, way back, and in an old university book from when I was in college, I found that basins were discussed, and this basin should be called an open basin. And in order to study and understand an open basin, references need to be made to some fixed point, such as sea level. Well references using the surface can be very misleading. In looking at a basin, studying water, why, you need to know the sea level, the references. May I ask, what basis or what authority was used? I don't understand a lot of these things, and I get confused about it. And people talk, and they discuss things, and I really don't know why this ordinance was passed in the first place. How can you pass an ordinance, and I hear that it's illegal, and I'm sure it's probably not, but I don't know. But I would like to have it clarified on what basis the ordinance, let's see, that's 3246, I believe, that was last August. That's really the thing that I think is important that we need to look at. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Gilbert. Mr. Clark, followed by Gwen Pelfrey.
Good morning, Paul Clark, San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau. First, I want to thank that this is sort of the least bad alternative until we can put a better alternative in place. And so I think as this process goes forward, the county needs to make clear what is an acceptable alternative to this offset program. And lastly, this fundamental question needs to be absolutely answered. And does the county intend for this program to remain in place beyond the term of the urgency ordinance? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Ms. Pelfrey, followed by Bill Pelfrey.
Gwen Pelfrey, Templeton resident. I've been following the water issue since you formed your Blue Ribbon Committee, so that's been a couple of years. And what I see in the urgency ordinance is that the ordinance itself is flawed, that it's covering 790 square miles of basin that doesn't always act the same. The map we saw today does have cones where there are problems, cones of depression, but it also has blue areas which says the water table has gone up. How can we inflict one fits-all program over all the landowners? And as was just previously stated, you know, what's going to happen? How are you going to keep managing the basin after the 2 years is up? But when it came to that new development and that offset clearance, it's putting those rural residences that need an offset where only 32 homeowners with 16 pending out of 900 have agreed to the retrofit. I once heard that there was a total potential of 1,600 homeowners in the entire rural area. The number came from James Caruso, so he can correct that if I'm wrong. But when I did the math, at only 5 out of every 100 coming forward, you will not find enough water for even the landowners that have already requested it. I mean the rural residential property owners that have requested it. And some of them live in areas that have no water problems. So as Cindy Steinbeck said, you turned their property water rights upside down. When it came to your offset program, I commend the RCD for what they've done, for the work they've done. It is complex, and following that kind of detail is, in fact, necessary to do it right. But not all the ag land should be treated the same. Some parts of the basin aren't in trouble. How can you restrict and take people's water rights away using the one-size-fits-all program? Also, with a very complex program for ag, you will not be able to keep your small ag folks. They can't deal with this type of complication. Again, we would be pushing our small ag out. We would never see ag the way it is today, which is what we love. We have to keep working on it. The urgency ordinance is not working as it's presently sitting.
Thank you, Ms. Pelfrey. Mr. Pelfrey, followed by Susan Harvey.
Before you start my time, would you bring up the slide that showed the aquifers? I think it was 13 or 14, something in there.
No?
No, it showed the aquifer itself.
The well decline.
The site,
the brand map?
Yeah. The aquifer map. It showed a slice of land with the wells in it. There it is. Would you blow that up, please? First off, I'd like to commend Laura Edwards and Jeff Berry on their hard work. This slide you see right here is a vertical cut. Now, our basin is not only vertical, it's horizontal. Now, there are several, like that long yellow sweep that goes through, possibly a flowing water. That's kind of a misnomer. It's more like seepage. But there was a story on the radio about from a well driller that said he drilled three wells, all at the same depth. At 100 feet, he hit, or 200 feet, he hit an artesian well. Moved over 100 feet, drilled another, it was dry. Moved up another 100 feet, enteric and not fact. That makes no sense. Then you heard today that somebody's land value, $10,000 down to $4,000. Where does he get his money back? Should he come to you and ask you? You're the one that made his land less valuable. Now, isn't part of your job to help the people of this county maintain their levels of happiness, their values, to increase their quality of life, not take control of it? Somebody yesterday once said that the politicians want control. It's not, they think that people no longer can run themselves, and you think you're better and no more. But yet, when politicians become involved, the expense goes up, the time goes up, everybody's upset. You don't know more just because you're elected. Listen to the people out there. This is a wide brush. Take a look at this map. It's vertical and horizontal. This is just one horizontal cut. That cone of depression will be different for every aquifer. You can't move water from one place to another. It's paper water. And if you can wring water out of paper, you're better than God.
Thank you, Mr. Pelfrey. Ms. Harvey, followed by Maria Lorca.
Good morning. Susan Harvey, North County Watch, and thank you for the opportunity to comment. I have a few questions that are kind of along the lines of Mr. Clark that have confused me about this. And maybe you can clarify later. So is the offset program expiring at the end of the urgency ordinance when it expires, or will you have or are you adopting an ordinance that makes this a permanent program? Because I'm confused about that. And the same thing like for with the residential program. Is it expiring, you know, the offsets in August of 2015, or is it a permanent thing? And regarding the residential one, a problem I've had with this once the numbers came up from Mr. Caruso, I think he commented that the cost in the savings for the residential offset, the cost came out to $15,000 an acre foot. And I don't see a nexus there between what that cost is to the person who's building a residential home and the amount of water that rural residential uses over the basin. I think the draft numbers show rural residential is using like less than or around 3% of the water. And so I have a problem with requiring people who are building new homes be paying the equivalent of, say, $15,000 an acre foot to save for their new home when agriculture is using most of the water. Offsets on residential, that's okay. I just think that the cost is too high. The $6,000 per new residence seems way too high to me. Back to my one thing when this was first discussed, I was always my assumption that the offset would be if you had 100 acres, plantable acres, and you wanted to plant 50, you'd be offsetting it with your own 50 rather than this other thing. So that I still see as a more workable solution if you're going to go with those kinds of offsets, but also I've come to see that's a very complicated way to go on dealing with, you know, the water issues here. But I do want to say how impressed I am with the program that RCD has come up with. It certainly doesn't lack depth and, careful looking at the issues, and I was very impressed with that, and especially the idea of their water duty factor, discussion and stuff. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Harvey. Ms. Lorca, followed by Kostas Radosavljevic.
Chairman Gibson, Supervisors, Maria Lorca, Creston. Thank you to the RCD. That was a masterful job. And I hope you'll consider presenting this to the Creston Advisory. I know they have lots of questions. I'm one of the people that thought the urgency ordinance was essential. I thought a timeout was exactly what we needed. And I thought, well, the real estate market will get all distorted for a while, but a two-year timeout is okay. But it only works if everybody does it. And it showed it's Supervisor Meacham's famous, the guys with the most money win. So I hope we could hear sometime from the realtors and the effect of this ordinance on the real estate market during this time. And I also am our land knowing the water situation under that land. So some land, as Supervisor Arnold has pointed out, really shouldn't be irrigated, and it isn't that expensive. Other land, for example, that people in Creston bought knew we had great water and need to maintain that real estate value. And lots of us have our whole net worth or most of it tied up in land over the basin. So you don't want to distort that for your constituents. And also this rush to plant and drill, there's a great article in the Sacramento Bee about the deep wells and the secrecy of the drilling permits. There's a growing consensus that we should use that information. And I'm wondering if we do use that well driller information, it's available to the county.
Thank you, Ms. Lorca. Mr. Radosavljevic, followed by Barbara Radosavljevic.
I am concerned about financial situation in all of this. What is the cost administering what you were suggesting that we should do? How is this cost going to be projected against particular wells so that we would know where taxes are going to go as we do all of this? It is, to me, obvious that this has not been addressed, or at least this has been addressed, it's not known to me. And I don't know why it's not known to me. But if you can correct me and show me that I don't know what I'm talking about, I would be very delighted to pull my remarks back. Okay, the second thing is this. I know of a number of people who have done something that I thought was very admirable. They had a neighbor whose well was gone, and they did not ask what is the condition of the well and why the well wasn't working. They just said, okay, you fix my fence, and I will transfer 3,000 gallons per month to your tank through hoses which they connected and passed it on. I thought it was awesome. I love that type of approach. This is the way we are to be working some of that stuff. And I want to know how many wells have gone bad that cannot be fixed by just redrilling, and that they cannot have it, and whether practical, simple solutions that neighborhood could solve themselves. Now, I'm not saying stop what you're doing, because maybe time is going to come when there won't be any water coming for 20, 30, 40 years. Then, God forbid. But so it's not something that should be stopped. But I think that other ones are way cheaper and would build a community. And that's something, a powerful concept, where people gain their significance through valuing each other. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Radosavljevic. Mrs. Radosavljevic, followed by Eric Greening.
Well, what I had to say was actually better said by Bill Pelfrey.
So I just want to state that I'm with Bill Pelfrey on that. I am very concerned about these deed restrictions you're talking about. We've talked about ways that, well, maybe they wouldn't affect the real estate, or maybe they might be able to be taken away. And I'm saying, yeah, what would you have to go through to get one taken away? How many fees would you have to pay the county to have them consider it? I think we're just making everything so complex. The RCD report shows how complex this whole thing is, and why? Because we keep wanting to make ordinances about things where we have everything covered, and those things aren't the same, but we are, in spite of what they said, making one size sort of fit all. And I think some of those variables were mentioned that, well, we just had to sort of average this. I think that landowners really are the best ones to manage their land, not the county. And that goes for water, too. I think there are other solutions, and when I think of probably the number of wells that have actually gone dry, and all the regulations we're putting on everybody to try to fix it when everybody doesn't need fixing. So sometimes I think that because we have a board, we think
if this is going to be brewing for quantity, where they're trying to, you know, trying to get 10 to 12 tons per acre, or growing for quality, where they might be very satisfied with 3 to 5 tons per acre, and it would have a very different impact on the basin. Anyway, moving on, I also am just in awe of the amazing work being done by the RCD and their work in progress. The technical part is just absolutely amazing. A missing ingredient, and Mike Brown, you know, what he pointed at near the end of the 47-page report, work in progress here, in the event a landowner believes that an error has been made, what's there does not look anything like an appeal process. Normally, if there is a dispute, there is some sort of an administrative appeal before the landowner resorts to court. And I don't think we want landowners resorting to court if they're dissatisfied, and I think they will be if there is no administrative appeal. And it might very well be the county that gets caught up in this. I don't even know who the appeal body would be, but the RCD is not normally an enforcement type organization. In fact, they take great pride in being a service organization that comes onto your land with permission to do things you ask them to do. And so they don't tend to have counsel at their meetings, and I don't know if they're set up for appeal hearings that could be further taken in another direction. If there was a district created at some point, it might become an appeal body, but it hasn't, and we don't know if that would be among its powers. So the appeal process would probably come back to you whether you want it or not. And if you pass this thing, it becomes yours, so you probably should be prepared for that and for what kind of process it would be and what kind of findings you would need to make. Anyway, thank you. And again, thanks to the RCD for awesome technical work.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. That was our last request to speak, so we'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board. Let me ask staff if there are any particular responses they want to give to public comment.
Perhaps just a couple.
Sure.
I think Mrs. Pelfrey mentioned 1,600 potential targets, and I think it's 2,700 potential targets, and we're down 900 of those so far with a response rate of, it's below 10%. It's about 5% right now. The second thing was, I believe it was Mr. Clark was asking about how long this program will be in effect, and something that I believe he mentioned at a previous meeting,
And basically, what I believe what I said is that one of the reasons why we're here doing this is because we have an unmanaged groundwater basin, and that these programs will probably continue until there is some type of effective funded basin management going on. And that goes not just for the Paso Robles groundwater basin, but remember, we have two other basins in the county that are basically unmanaged right now. They're monitored but not managed, and they have a similar problem.
Mr. Chairman, if I can tag on to that before James goes on, I think it's clear, we need to make it very clear, though, that the urgency ordinance expires in August of 2015. And so the items that are set forth in the urgency ordinance will not apply and will not go beyond August 27th of 2015.
However,
there are a number of programs that the county already is doing. For instance, because the Paso Robles groundwater basin was acknowledged as a level severity 3 in the biennial report, your board actually already authorized, and there are already amendments in our ordinance that reflect the need to do a 2-to-1 offset for discretionary projects in that basin. There are a number of other items that are already in place in other basins. There's items addressing the level of severity 3 in the South County on the Napomo Mesa. And in addition, your board has directed that staff process the 5 amendments to our ordinance and general plan that we outlined today. And those could put additional regulations and standards in place.
Council, did you want to weigh in on this?
Yes, Rita Neal, County Council. So to the extent that this specific offset program is tied to the urgency ordinance, if the urgency ordinance expires and the board does not make amendments to any other land use ordinance with an offset program, then this particular program would go away unless there are other areas within the general plan that require the offset. Because
to try to give a better understanding to what we're trying to accomplish here, the urgency ordinance that was put in place, and staff adequately responded to this in terms of, if we can't get a district or we can't get something in place, we have to substantiate doing something to address the concern. Those concerns would be addressed by ordinances, whatever the case may be, to manage the basin. And as you heard Bob Brown speak this morning, there is legislation coming down that will manage groundwater. Either we're going to do it or the state's going to do it. We've said that time and time again. So to get the adequate information that's necessary to be able to put things in place to try to help this situation, I think is important. And I don't think we should give up on it. Whether the urgency ordinance is right or wrong, I still believe that it was the right thing to do because it gave us that time out to get our arms around this thing to figure out where we're going to go. I could see the criticism that would come if we didn't do anything. So I think that I appreciate the work that they're doing. I know that this is going to be very complex. One of the questions that I had posed to the RCD, and I've asked the Farm Bureau to weigh in on, if we do get an El Nino, which they're saying about an 80% chance at this point, what can we do to put something in place, catch basins of some sort, that would try to help address the issue of the aquifer? RCD has ways to do this. Farm Bureau is trying to contact landowners. We need to have that connection and then the funding to be able to do it, and it's not that much funding to accomplish it. And it would get something done, because I can tell you, I can see this coming. If we do nothing, we get an El Nino, we go back into a drought, you're going to ask us again, what the hell have you done? So we need to get something in place to get moving on this. But I still think that this is a good idea. I appreciate the work that's being done on this, and I think data gathering is not a one-time deal. We can't look back, and for those that feel that we haven't got enough information, there's 10 studies on this basin in the last 11 years. So I think that it's important to recognize that data is something that's going to be an ongoing requirement. We can't just say, okay, what we have now is good enough. We're going to have to continue to gather the data to figure out where we are and how we protect it in the future. Off my soapbox.
Thank you, Mr. Meacham. Ms. Arnold?
So I agree with Supervisor Meacham that California does have a huge problem, and but that huge problem in part is due to the fact that over the last four or five decades, we've developed both residential development and agricultural development in places that don't have a natural water source. Water's been, has been moved around and has been inadequate in this last drought cycle. Well, where we're different here in this Paso Robles Basin is we're sitting on a huge of 31 million acre-feet of water. So to me, the key is, and the important thing is just our ability to maintain the health of our basin and manage the different the diverse sections of our basin so that we don't run into trouble. So it's my assumption that our urgency ordinance was passed as an urgency ordinance with a special set of processing rules that was allowed to happen because it was an urgency ordinance. And these things we've contracted, thankfully, with the RCD for coming up with a methodology that we've never used before, and that is determining what a one-to-one offset looks like for agricultural production, and they're doing a great job with that. But it still belongs to the urgency ordinance that, in my opinion, should go away. We used a fast-track process, and we should, if we're going to have a permanent ordinance of any kind, we should use the correct process with the correct amount of public input and comment to go back and readdress it. So to several of our speakers spoke to that, and it's my assumption that the urgency ordinance is an urgency ordinance with its set of rules, and it is temporary. And if we choose the methodology, of course, will come in handy if we choose to go forward with a permanent one, but that should be a separate process.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold. Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll pick up on something that Mr. Greening had mentioned. So we've got, in terms of the vesting rights, over 2,100 acres that have been approved essentially without any offset whatsoever. Not even sure how many acre feet that would equate to, but we see that coming. I mean, and we have an urgency ordinance that, at best, will offset in a neutral way. We seem to be on the road to having no governance structure. We didn't strengthen an AB 3030 plan. And some people are under the impression that we really don't have a problem in the basin, or that perhaps both the climate of California and the world will be changing miraculously to something very different than it has historically been, and we will be flush with water throughout. If we're wrong, studies that we've read, whether people want to agree with 10 scientific studies or not, it's not just the weather. It's not just the drought that has caused the decline in the basin. And it's not as if there is, you know, this magical way to, you know, to fill this basin at some healthy capacity. I mean, we're using more water than we have. And we'll continue to use more water than we have. And if we don't do something about that, it's going to be an economic disaster for the entire county. If the people who are pushing for the most precautious way forward are wrong, the worst that happens is that we have developed much better practices. We have tried to grab hold of a problem. We've increased conservation, and we've probably put ourselves on the road towards long-term solutions. If the people who want us to do nothing are wrong, you've screwed the entire county. And I just don't understand why that's a gamble that you want to take for your own short-term interests, whether it be political or economic, but that's—it seems like, you know, that's what we hear a lot of. And I think that we should be talking about how we can strengthen these measures and make them permanent until such time that we have a truly positive picture of this basin. If we don't, perhaps a lot of people will be happy on some levels, but there will be a lot of people that will find themselves in the same kind of situation, and I believe that we will see this chamber filled with people who are once again in panic about their homes and their ability to have water and to keep themselves safe in the event of fires and all those other reasons. So, you know, I'm a little down on what people are, because I'm not really hearing, well, here's the alternatives that we should be putting into place to manage the health of this basin. I think we should be doing more than we're currently doing, because clearly you're going to see very soon a lot of vines and other plantings up. You're going to see more people panicking as they find that their wells continue to drop. Hopefully we have a really great rain season that will be temporary. We've all agreed, if on nothing, that we should be looking at some long-term solutions, because this is not a problem that's going to go away. I don't know how we can get to long-term solutions if we just say, let's not worry about the short-term solutions. So I hope that we examine how we might make these offsets stronger than we originally agreed to, because there's an assumption somehow that if your property has a well that produces enough water, then, you know, it's always going to be that way, and it really doesn't matter if somebody on the other side of the basin is running dry.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. I concur, and after we hear from Supervisor Ray, I'd like to suggest a path forward here. Ms. Ray?
I wanted to take just a moment to talk, really bring this down to a basic economics question when we're talking about so many people still coming up here and saying we do not have urgency. There is a difference between shortage and scarcity. And we have a combination of those two things going on right now. Scarcity is a limited resource. And that limitation and limited nature of that resource is permanent. That never changes. And water is a scarce resource. It's one of the most scarce resources on the planet. So those scarce resources upon which our livelihoods and our very survival depend requires cooperation and regulation. We are also on top of that in a situation where a scarce resource is also experiencing an extreme shortage. And therein lies the urgency ordinance. So while that urgency ordinance is going to expire at some point, and the shortage is going to be relieved at some point, be it next year when people expect an El Nino that may or may not come, or maybe that'll be at another time, this scarce resource will experience shortages from time to time. And so what we're talking about here is the difference between how do you manage a shortage and how do you manage scarcity. And the urgency ordinance manages the shortage, and the ongoing ordinance changes manage the scarcity, and that is necessary when you have a shared resource like this. So I guess I'm making that a little bit academic, but I think it's really important to bring that around and make sure that people understand that an emergency ordinance only deals with a shortage and it doesn't deal with scarcity. And so as we craft what we craft going forward, if we keep those two
Agriculture uses so much of the water. But, you know, when you look at the things, other things we've directed staff to do, and I'm looking at the bottom of page 6 of 7 of their cover memo where we talked about things we've directed them to do in an ongoing basis. We set them up to work on general plan and ordinance amendments for five different areas, and to me, quite clearly, head and shoulders, the most important is water-neutral new development. That's really the purpose of the urgency ordinance. If you look at the urgency ordinance, it is about water neutrality. It is not about fixing the basin. It's about trying to keep things from getting worse at an accelerating level. And so one question I have of staff is, within the authorizations that this board has given you, are we on track to continue the water neutrality of new development as a matter of our land use ordinance and general plan past the expiration of the urgency ordinance in August of 2015? Proper environmental review, all the steps that need to be taken to put those measures into place.
As to timing of that, as Mr. Crusoe mentioned as part of his presentation, the more simpler amendments, and typically by simpler we mean that the environmental review is at a level that can be done rather quickly, could come forward rather quickly. That is not one of those amendments. The water neutral new development is a more complicated amendment, would require a potentially more complicated environmental review and would not be one of those that would come forward rather quickly.
On your current time?
On our current time schedule. We are working on all five. As Mr. Crusoe mentioned, we were talking to ALAB the other night about a water waste ordinance. So if your board wanted to provide staff direction on which one of these to work on in some kind of order, that would help us out. Otherwise, we're going to continue to work on all five of them.
And that's exactly where I was going, Ms. Griffin. Again, you look at the other ones, and we've had a little bit of discussion as to their efficacy, but quite clearly, this board, we're not making progress very fast on a governance structure. We're a long way out on enhancing an AB 3030 plan that's going to actually start reversing this. It seems to me that the least this board can do is to continue the water neutrality of all development as it's outlined in the urgency ordinance. I'd note that even with the provisions of the urgency ordinance, we're chipping away, allowing increased water use at this basin because the offset program does not apply to parcels less than 20 acres in size. Staff's indicating at this point that applications for exemption from the urgency ordinance are all coming in at 20-acre parcels or less. So we're continuing to make the process worse. It's my desire, and I'd like to get some consensus from my colleagues, that we should direct staff to marshal their resources to the matter of water neutrality on new development, that we, this board, expects that the water neutrality of new development be extended beyond the expiration of the urgency ordinance about 11 or 13 months from now, because it's, again, the very least we can do. I'd offer colleagues opportunity to comment on that. I have Mr. Meacham and then Ms. Arnold.
Well, if we're going to do that, and we need to be talking about something countywide. I'm not going to just focus on one area of problems where we have others. We have problems over on the coast. We have problems in the South County, but yet we keep focusing on regulatory issues right here. And I'm not going to go there with that. The other thing that I would like to see is I haven't seen the water waste ordinance proposal. I haven't seen that. And we often get questions from the public about these that come in before we see that, and it's difficult to answer. So some of these things that you are proposing at this particular point in time, before I want to make direction to staff, I'd like to see that so that way we can weigh in before the public does to us.
Ms. Arnold?
I agree. First of all, how will we ever have the trust of the public when we fast-track something in the name of an urgency ordinance and then suddenly we just carry that forward? This was clearly fast-tracked for a particular area of the county. I agree with Supervisor Meacham. We have some maybe more serious water shortage problems throughout the county, and why we would focus on the Paso Basin only, which, again, sits over 31 million acre-feet of water, and not all of the basin has access to that water. But secondly, I think what I'm saying in summary is that we need to – that enables us to use almost 18,000 acre-feet out of the Nacimiento surface water storage. All month, this board has been talking about taking that water and moving it to places outside the basin. That is an opportunity for us to correct our environmental disaster in the Paso Robles Basin, alleviate groundwater pumping. We don't have a jurisdiction over the city of Paso Robles that just lies smack in the middle of the Cone of Depression. We don't know what it looks like when that ability to use Nacimiento water is fully exercised. We'll know what that looks like very, very soon. But to jump to conclusions and affect people's ability to use their property, especially agricultural property, we are affecting the people in the unincorporated areas, and the savings that we might recognize from that could easily be used by folks elsewhere in the county. So I think it's very premature to talk about imposing permanent ordinances until we have more facts in front of us to make better decisions.
Thank you. Mr. Hill?
Well, I guess I would, again, ask both North County supervisors what it is that we should do to manage the groundwater basin in Paso. I mean, I guess some people believe that there's no decline. Some people believe there is a decline. Some people think that we just need to somehow figure out how to fill Nacimiento Lake and use it all for the basin. And some people think that because regulation is something they don't like, we should wait until the state imposes it. You know, I would be happy to support something that actually was going to address the health of the basin and do so effectively. I just haven't heard it. I mean, I hear, which is a common way to do nothing, well, we need more information. We have, you know, even Supervisor Meacham has said we have quite a lot of information to suggest that we have a problem, and I agree. It's not a problem that's in Paso Basin alone. It's a problem that's not just countywide. It's a statewide problem. So what are we going to do? Are we going to wait for the state to act? Or are we going to try to do something that we have that we've been trying to do now for a year to address the health of the basin? I mean, that's, you know, I'm open for the leadership that each district wants to offer. I just haven't, you know, I don't think we've gotten where we should be getting to. I don't, you know, we haven't certainly stopped the pumping on the basin at all. And we can continue down that road, but where is that going to lead us? And our responsibility is not just to protect things as they currently are, but to look out for the future of the county. And I would recommend that the same kind of conservative thinking that goes into our budgeting, where we agree and have agreed as a board, three of us have agreed for more than 6 years, that we should do everything we can to maintain a strong and conservative financial outlook in terms of our budgeting, should also be, hence the word conservation, applied to how we address this incredibly important resource in our county. I'm open to actual suggestions of what we should be doing.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Ms. Ray, and then I'd like to jump in.
First of all, I want to give a perfect example why the flood control district is not the appropriate control factor here. And Supervisor Arnold has brought up several times the issue that she has with the Choro interchange or the Choro intertie. And in theory, that or any other thing that moves water from one place to another, again, can be controlled by this board. And if the flood control district was not, I don't know how to put this without being insulting, but I'm insulting future people who don't exist yet, but pretending that I don't trust everybody who's sitting up here, then the water that we're talking about in the Paso Robles groundwater basin can be moved out of that basin without the consent of the two supervisors of that basin. That is the end of that story. That is why it's the wrong group. That's the bottom line. So we can say that we trust the people up here, which I do, but in going forward, that's an important piece of that puzzle, and that's part of what we have to be talking about when we're talking about long-term strategies and local control. With regard to what we're supposed to be doing today and the recommended action, I would not be willing to support making this permanent at this time because we haven't untangled all of the policy issues. We don't have the language in front of us. We haven't examined issues like I brought up with regard to future FHA financing with and how this falls into that. So I would like, I will make a motion that we move forward today to receive and file the status, which doesn't require a motion, but secondly, that we approve and instruct the chairperson to assign the resolution that makes that small correction, and that we wait until we see how this develops from the RCD over time as to whether or not we make this permanent.
So there's a decline in some.
All right, but if we could, we'll get you back in here. Ms. Arnold, carry on.
Yep, thank you. The cone of depression is actually that we see in the basin, the biggest area that's problematic is right around the city of Paso Robles. And this happened before my time, so I can take no credit, but Supervisor Meacham, you can. The development of the Nacimiento pipeline, we have water that we aren't even using that can be put to use there. We also, it's my understanding, staff will be bringing very soon a no-export ordinance to address some of what Supervisor Ray's concerns are. So, both of those things, I mean, we have water sitting there that can be utilized to alleviate more water than we maybe need if we can find the right places to recharge, to bring our basin into complete safe yield. So that's what I'm proposing as a solution for right now. That is my solution. So that ends my comments.
I'd like to call the question on this motion. Madam Clerk, a roll call vote, please.
Ms. Ray?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
And Mr. Gibson?
Yes. And continuing this discussion, I'd like to entertain a motion on some staff direction here. In commentary leading up to this, I would note that various of my colleagues here at the dais have been diverting our attention. Supervisor Meacham wants us to look at other areas of the county rather than the Paso Grande Basin.
And
you want to look at other ordinances aside from water neutrality. Supervisor Arnold wants to look at parts of the basin. Basically, she wants to focus on some green trees within a forest that's dying. And I think that that's a diversionary tactic. She wants to focus on other projects and other solutions, which are fine. In the due course of time, we need to do that. And Supervisor Ray wants to focus on some very particular details of how this works. I'd like to ask staff on the matter of process here. Is it possible? First of all, would you comment on the process? We're talking about making amendments to the land use ordinance and the general plan that will require extensive public input, environmental analysis, and public hearings as follows.
That's correct. So on March 4th, your board authorized staff to begin processing five different water conservation type amendments to our ordinances and general plan. Those are at a countywide level. They are not specific to one basin or another, so we are looking at these at a countywide level. The ordinances typically are, we do initial outreach, especially on things that we're not that familiar with. So, for instance, using the water waste ordinance as an example, we are trying to outreach now to agriculturalists who are comfortable and familiar with irrigation practices to learn about how something like that might be written. Then an ordinance is prepared, a public review draft is prepared, environmental review is complete. We do further outreach typically, and then once the environmental review is complete, there are two public hearings that are required to amend the ordinance or general plan, one in front of your planning commission, and then ultimately your board makes the final decision, except in the coastal zone where you go on to the coastal commission.
So plenty of public. If this board directed you to focus resources on water neutrality for all new development, structural and ag, in all, let's say, level of severity, three basins in the county, could you muster the resources to get this done in time to have that in place in August of 2015?
We'd be willing to say that we could have something prepared and in hearings, but you can never tell what may happen in a hearing situation. But that would give adequate time to do the public outreach, complete the environmental review, and begin hearing.
If we narrowed this focus to the Paso Robles groundwater basin, given the obvious amount of time we've spent on this, would that make it more likely we could have this in place?
Probably not.
Okay. So my thought is that this board should direct, and I'd entertain a motion if a colleague is so inclined, that we direct staff to focus the necessary resources on water-neutral development, both structural and agricultural, for all basins that have level of severity 3, on a timetable that would make it possible to have these ordinance and general plan amendments in place by August of 2015.
Is the implication that of that list of five things, that is the highest priority?
By far and away.
I disagree with that, and the reason why is because what I see here is the water waste issue being a huge one, and us working with not only the urban interface and through
be refined, whereas the concept, and I saw Mr. Caruso nodding at that point, we don't know what water waste amounts to. We know what water neutrality amounts to. and we have a very clear way of moving forward to at least do that. And we've done precious little else. Mr. Hill?
If I understand Supervisor Arnold, the best way to approach this is to get Nasi water to the areas that are in decline and to fill those areas of the aquifer to recharge it, and that will be and so my question is, and I'm not arguing with him, my question is, what's stopping us? How long will it take to do this, and how much will it cost? I don't know if we have anyone that could even reasonably from Public Works or, you know, I mean, what's stopping us from just taking all the water needed from, as Supervisor Arnold says, from Nasi to the areas in the Paso Basin where we see the declines, where even people who believe the earth is differently shaped would agree that there is decline, and we put the water in there, and how long will it take us to do that? How much will it cost to do that? I mean, if that's the answer, I'd much rather see us just, you know, arrest the decline and deal with the basin and try to unravel very complicated methods of regulation. I mean, I'm all for that. So what's stopping us from developing that? I mean, is there anyone that at least could suggest an answer?
There are currently about 6,000 unallocated acre-feet of water from Nacimiento. And there are currently discussions between all the Nacimiento partners about what to do with that water. In fact, we had a meeting about a month or so ago. That being said, we're a long way off from agreement about how to divvy up that 6,000 acre-feet, how to pay for it. As you can imagine, there are a lot of varying interests. And while we're all committed to working towards a solution, it's not in sight yet, that's for sure. Secondarily, it's my understanding that an environmental impact report would be required to be done, at least a supplemental EIR to the one that was done for the Nacimiento project in order to utilize that 6,000 feet. So it's going to take some time. Beyond that, I don't have a definitive answer in terms of costs or exact timeline because we're still in the fairly early stages of that negotiation.
I would like to respond to that. So the city of Paso Robles, again, in the center of the Cone Depression, will be able to utilize water as soon as their treatment plant is finished, which is very soon, and we will start to see them not solely dependent on pumped water anymore. So that's something we have to look forward to very soon. It's already been done. You all laid the groundwork or helped. The county facilitated the project. Paso Robles City also will be finishing up their wastewater treatment plant at just about the same time, where they will make available 3,000 to 4,000, I believe, acre feet that can be used for recharge. Identifying the best areas for recharge is something that we could be working on. And I believe the RCD has been trying to tell us for years now that they would like to see some bladder dams, some places, as soon as we do start getting rainfall, where we can hold water and be sure it's percolating. Those are right now things that we can do right now, and before we just blanket regulation where it may not even make an impact on people's properties, I think that we should start to see what kind of improvements. And I also think that Supervisor Meacham's right. We have got some very serious problems in Los Osos and Cambria. The South County has been adjudicated, so I expect that the courts are actually monitoring the health of the basin there. But we have some Avila. We have other places that we need to be addressing besides focusing all resources on the Paso Basin. I think we have been making progress, and we need to allow some of that to show how much progress and what else is needed.
Mr. Meacham?
First of all, I don't know how your suggestion, how that impacts RCD's work in terms of what they're trying to establish on the offset issue and what that would require from them. Secondly, I think I'm the only one that's been on the Nacimiento Commission since its inception, and there is a lot of discussion about that remaining water and how that water would be allocated, and folks are trying to secure the right to that. But I think one of the other key things, and this kind of goes a little bit to the regulatory issue, is that number one, where would you put the Nacimiento water? Who would take it, and who would pay for it? That's the key questions in trying to solve. It's not going to solve that the problem in the North County. The other part of that, let's say that you did do that. do you then allow unlimited pumping because the water's back in that basin? I don't think so, because it just exacerbates the problem down the line. So there's this is pretty complex, and it's pretty difficult to get through. I do believe
your offset program.
As far as taking it to other locations?
Well, or as far as developing a means of calculating offsets and putting them in place.
I mean, because I would assume, I would assume that if you put these type of offsets in place, they could be applicable to other areas without mm-hmm. going into the right. other areas at this particular point, but they would be more of a suggestion at that.
My thought is that these are based on evapotranspiration and irrigation efficiencies and frost protection mm-hmm. requirements, and same formula applies anywhere you put it.
It is, and that can all be adaptable based on those microclimates and that site-specific information. Once October comes and we're ready to roll with the program, you may do that if you wish. It will be ready to go.
It will be ready to go. Mm-hmm. Your work on developing it will be done. So I don't see that it affects either the RCD. I will comment, Mr. Meacham. You can imagine, should the urgency ordinance expire without some provision for requiring water neutrality in place, recall the frenzy of last summer in the months and weeks leading up to the institution of the urgency ordinance. And that urgency ordinance comes off, and we're not prepared to deal with water neutrality, we're going to have another mess. And so, again, it's my thought. We should direct staff to move this up, get this ready for August of 2015. I offered to entertain a motion.
Can
I didn't hear anything. Sure, sure.
Jim or Cammie, with regard to the five things that are here, obviously all of these things in theory are moving forward as priority items for the planning department. How if we did not do what Chairman Gibson is saying, how many of these five things do you expect to be able to come to completion by next by next August, and how many of them are just part of planning's ongoing efforts? It was my assumption as we directed planning to do this that all of these would be coming forward by August 2015, and maybe I made too much of a jump there.
There are some of these potential amendments that are something that we're very familiar with, that we can use past ordinances that we've already adopted. For instance, we're pretty familiar with how to put in place a retrofit on sale ordinance. So that probably wouldn't trigger a very high level of CEQA review and would be something we could turn around rather quickly. Perhaps even the water supply assessments for new subdivisions would fall into that category. We've got some state law we can follow, although we'd have to manipulate it. And potentially we could get some kind of water waste ordinance to your board in that amount of time, because again, we don't feel that that would trigger a high level of CEQA review, but would require a very dedicated amount of outreach and a learning curve on what that would exactly mean, because we don't have an idea of what that means, at least in ag. We know what those ordinances look like in urban areas, but we don't know what those kinds of ordinances look like in the rural areas in agriculture. But for example, the water neutral new development, we do think would require a higher level of CEQA review. And even new landscape requirements are technically very complicated to write, and those are going to take just longer to prepare, especially if we are working on all the others at the same time.
So what falls off the list? If we go with water neutral new development as a priority issue, what falls off the list?
Let me jump in, if I may, here. And Mr. Bergman and Ms. Griffin may kick me after the meeting, but I'm going to throw this out as an idea here, that if these five are all equal high priority, you know, we can make them a priority and bring them to your board for consideration prior to the expiration of the urgency ordinance. However, it may mean other work that planning is doing may fall by the wayside, such as I know an update to workforce housing on the general plan is coming before your board next week, and I know that's a high priority as well for your board. However, if you want us to move forward on these five and bring them back to you before the expiration of the ordinance, we will. It means other things will slip, and we'll bring a report back to your board on what else will be tabled till a future date.
Your county administrator is correct. That's
that we're
going to
kick him?
That, yeah, no, not that we're going to kick him. that the timelines I'm providing for you are that we are continuing to work on everything that you've acknowledged that we're working on as part of our priority list that we bring to you. It's not letting anything slide. But
my question is,
if we were to let part of these slide to work on, let's say, water waste and water neutral, then the other three would just simply slide. They would come at a later date.
And so what you're saying then is if we keep these five moving forward, potentially all five will be here by next
year. Without an AB 3030 plan, if we did have a groundwater management plan and we had effective groundwater management in this basin and other basins, I don't believe we would be here talking about, at least the planning department would not be here talking about this. Just remember, the reason that we're here talking about this is the planning function works on the basis of findings of fact. And if you have a groundwater basin in a level of severity 3 in decline, and you have to make findings of fact to support development, and that there was adequate water, without a implemented, funded, ongoing groundwater management plan, you don't have those findings, especially for a basin that you know is in decline. Therefore, we're here, and what I'm calling we're calling the gap period between now and when there is an effective groundwater management plan and planning function can step out of that, that gap period, however long it's going to be, in our strategic discussions, we were figuring 5 years, that's how long we're going to have to try to hang on here and do this. That's what we have to do. If we do not do that, we really don't know how to address the level of severity 3 in this basin, in Los Osos, and in South County.
I thought Mr. Ogren, before he left, was establishing some of the criteria for a more robust AB
3030. He is.
So
yep. And he did.
He did.
And let me just add to that. It was a couple months ago, at best, your board formally initiated the resolution to move forward with the updated AB 3030 plan, and we have 2 years in the time frame to complete that. And Mr. Ogren has more or less updated his first pass, a very rough cut that we're currently taking a look at. In addition to that, however, there is legislation in Sacramento that is pending that may dramatically alter AB 3030 plans in groundwater management. And so we are trying to determine, as we watch that legislation, really how much effort should be put into the AB 3030 plan now under existing regulation, if it's going to be dramatically changed. And we're hoping to get an answer to that soon, but we're in a very fluid dynamic at the moment.
Well, that was going to be my follow-up question about the legislation coming down and how that would correlate with AB 3030 here.
Ms. Arnold?
I just think that the more efficient way to deal with this is to look at the level 3 severity areas of the county before we look at a countywide, if it's going to take us away from all the other issues we've been working on and planning has on their plate.
We would be doing that, wouldn't we? Isn't that what we're talking about?
We're talking about countywide.
Right, the countywide and LOS 3, right?
We have been, and Supervisor Arnold, at least internally, we are focusing on the level of severity 3 areas. That's what we're using as the trigger to even consider.
But the ordinances that you're talking about now bringing forward would just be blanketed countywide. And that's where I'm wishing that we could look at the most problematic areas, not just the Paso Robles Basin.
We might
and
have misunderstood then.
A nexus.
No, the term countywide meaning that we're going beyond the Paso Robles groundwater basin. But we, as staff, have been having internal conversations about what would trigger, for instance, water neutral development, and all of our conversations have centered around the basins that have been certified LOS 3. So when we would bring back an ordinance to you, it would apply only in those areas. A water waste ordinance might only apply in those areas. It's how you would actually write the ordinance itself. If you, as the board, want the focus to be in those areas specifically, you can provide that direction.
Well, that's what I'm asking. I thought when we were saying countywide, you meant countywide.
When we take the show on the road, that's the first thing we have to explain, is that while I might say countywide, what we are focusing on internally is not everything in the county. For instance, water neutral new development. Water neutral new development really only makes sense, at least we think, is when you're dealing with a shared resource. And in our case, a shared resource where there's a problem. So all those areas of the county where you drill a well, you have fractured rock, you don't think you're sharing that crack with anybody else, is there a reason to have water neutral new development? So far, we've said no.
So if I might, Ms. Arnold, more?
With that, speaking to Supervisor Ray's interest in water waste, I mean, one thing we could do, according having heard from the CAO and planning management here, we could direct staff to have water-neutral new development and water waste back before us in time to be in place by August of 2015 and to marshal such resources as necessary. I'd be interested. If you're interested in that, I'd certainly entertain a motion, Ms. Ray, and see where we go with this.
I think this should be your motion.
I will make a motion that we direct staff to focus necessary resources on bringing back the ordinance amendments regarding
prioritizing here, right?
Well, let me clarify, if I may, and somebody else can jump in if necessary. I think the goal here would be to target having all five of these done prior to the expiration of the urgency ordinance and doing everything else on the priority list. However, if it appears that's not going to be attainable, then the water neutral development and water waste ordinances would be the highest priority, and we would ensure that those two are absolutely done prior to the expiration.
And I think it was perhaps...
Again, making sure that this other priority that we set at this board with the workforce housing is not getting shuffled by the wayside. In other words... That's a priority issue. These two things, if this passes, would become priority issues. The others fall behind that. So addressing Supervisor Arnold's issue that it doesn't take by prioritizing these two, it doesn't take away from that effort.
That would be correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Very good. With no other lights on, a roll call vote. Madam Clerk, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Ms. Ray?
Yes.
And Ms. Arnold?
No.
All right. Thank you very much. We will reconvene at 1:30, unless my colleagues will rebel at that idea. I don't see them so rebelling. So we'll be back at 1:30. When we're ready. Excuse me. And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We have reconvened our July 8th meeting. We are going to jump back slightly in the agenda to recognize a couple of good folks serving the Family Care Network. We have two resolutions honoring two exceptional individuals. I've asked Supervisor Ray to read the first one, please. And if you would, as your name is called, and I believe, Ms. Sargent, you're the first, come to a lectern for us, please.
This is a resolution recognizing Joan Gellert Sargent for her exemplary service to the children and families of San Luis Obispo County. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas Family Care Network Incorporated has selected Joan Gellert Sargent as the 2013 recipient of the Circle of Serving Award for her extraordinary efforts towards enhancing the well-being of children and families in San Luis Obispo County through decades of exceptional, multifaceted community service and unwavering support of children, youth, and families. And whereas Joan Gellert Sargent, resident of San Luis Obispo County, mother and community activist, has dedicated her life to working with charitable endeavors whose vision she shares, supporting their effort to improve lives not just momentarily, but by serving alongside these organizations, acting as a champion for change and expanding opportunities within our community. And whereas Joan Gellert Sargent currently serves as the legacy leader of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County's Women's Legacy Fund, and has also collaborated with three local Rotary clubs on their international Polio Plus program, helping to raise proceeds that will help inoculate 76,000 children against polio. And whereas Joan Gellert Sargent, with a heart focused on supporting families and children in need, has worked to further the mission of many important organizations, including Family Care Network Incorporated, the Central Coast Children's Choir, the Community Counseling Center, the Central Coast Women's League, as well as many, many more. And whereas Joan Gellert Sargent exemplifies the mission of the Family Care Network Incorporated, which is to, quote, enhance the well-being of children and families in partnership with our community, end quote. Her commitment to and passion for helping to remove barriers to success and instilling hope for a better tomorrow in others stands as an inspiration to us all. It is our honor to celebrate this incredible community leader for being an outstanding role model of community service. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the counties of San Luis Obispo Board of Supervisors, State of California, does hereby recognize Joan Gellert Sargent for her exemplary service to children and families of San Luis Obispo County.
Congratulations, Joe. We can pose a formal photo op if you'd like.
Where do you want it? Do you have one arranged later? Or?
It's up to you.
Well, we're looking at your fearless
benefactor. Okay. Sir.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Making sure. And this is my family, my son Mark,
oh,
my
great.
Daughter-in-law, my granddaughter, Autumn.
If you'd shift about 3 feet to your right,
there
you probably will.
Surround her. There you go.
Unless there's some of us you don't want
excellent.
To see.
Thank you. And a few years ago, Neil and I had lunch, I think, with Paul Reddy to talk about this piece of property out by the airport that had all this possibility, and now, of course, several years later, it's one of the places that, it's where the Family Care Network has its headquarters. So who knew that such a thing would happen? But I'm certainly thrilled. So this resolution recognizing Neil Tarda for his exemplary service to the children and families of San Luis Obispo County. Whereas the Family Care Network Incorporated has selected Neil Tardif as the 2014 recipient of the Circle of Serving Award, following Joan, a terrific example, for his extraordinary efforts towards enhancing the well-being of children and families in San Luis Obispo County throughout the years of exceptional community service and a professional assistance to children, youth, and families in need, Neil Tardif, appellant attorney and resident of San Luis Obispo County, has dedicated much of his professional life to supporting foster and high-needs children and families, currently serving as legal counsel for court-appointed special advocates, and we know as CASA, and Family Care Network at no cost, as well as representing hundreds of children in dependency court, juvenile court, and family law court pro bono. Neil Tardif, in 2009, while serving as the president of the San Luis Obispo County Bar Association, established the San Luis Obispo Law Line, which currently utilizes his office staff and Cal Poly interns in fielding over 5,000 telephone calls per year to provide free legal assistance to individuals in need. Neil Tardif has been involved both professionally and personally with multiple organizations focused on providing critical services to children and families, serving on the board of both CASA and the United Way, as well as working as a volunteer for CASA and helping a variety of children within the dependency court, including Family Care Network, youth who he served as a CASA worker and mentor to. Neil Tardif exemplifies the mission of the Family Care Network, which is to enhance the well-being of children and families in partnership with our community. His commitment to and passion for volunteering, his expertise, energy, and time to give voice to the voiceless and to help fight the good fight stands as an inspiration to us all. It is our honor to celebrate this incredible community member for being an outstanding role model of community service. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the County of San Luis Obispo Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize Neil Tardif for his exemplary service to children and families of San Luis Obispo County. Neil?
Thank you, sir.
Again, I think we can
claim
a photo op if you'd like.
Yeah.
We're in the middle.
Let's get Neil's people over here.
He's going to do a selfie.
That's good. You know, a, a five-camera setup is very, very, very good. That's
Teresa, you can come over a little bit. I can see you.
That's above average interest here. Uh-oh. Trouble now. All right. Mr. Tardif, the lectern is yours.
Well, first of all, to follow in Ms. Sargent's footsteps is an honor for sure, because she's a woman that is incredible in this county, what she's provided to everybody, particularly in the children arena. Board members, it's an honor to be here. It's an honor to be in this county and to help the children that need a lot of help. And I hope more follow in my footsteps when I retire, because we need it badly. So thank you for the honor. It's an incredible honor. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Tardo. We thank you all for your good works and wish you the very, very best. Madam Clerk, would you then introduce the first of our afternoon items?
There goes the good news.
Mr. Hill, it's all good. That would be number 46, please.
Hearing to consider a resolution authorizing the collection of service charges within the county service areas 1, Old Galaxy Park in Track 1690 in Napomo, 1A, Galaxy Park in Track 1898 in Napomo, 1F, New Galaxy in Napomo, 7A, Oak Shores, 18, San Luis Country Club Estates, and 21, Cambria Road Improvements, Districts 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Welcome, Ms. Colvard.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jennifer. Can you hear me? For the record, my name is Jennifer Colvard with County Public Works Department. This board item today is part of a routine annual process where service charges are placed on property tax bills for various services performed.
Madam Clerk, item 47.
Hearing to consider an appeal of the Templeton Area A road improvement fee by Barbara Condon.
Ms. Condon. Ms. Condon, what we'll do is we're going to hear a staff report. Please take a seat up in the front row here. Okay. We'll hear a staff report from Mr. Honeycutt, and at that point we'll give you an opportunity to present what you wish to us, open it to the public, and then bring it back for deliberation. Mr. Honeycutt.
Good afternoon, Chairman Gibson and supervisors. I'm Frank Honeycutt from County Public Works, and as you mentioned, this item is to consider an appeal to pay the Templeton Road fee, and the appellant is Barbara Condon, who has just talked to. The project site in question is in a residential area near the town center of Templeton. You can kind of see from this map, perhaps a little better would be on this map here. The appellant has applied for a building permit to build a home and a garage in a residential zone, all pretty standard. But, of course, along the way, she was met with being required to pay the Templeton Road fee and is now seeking to not have to pay the fee. Title 13 of the County Code allows for a waiver or an adjustment to the fee when it can be shown that there is no nexus or not adequate nexus to the amount or the timing of the fee. This, I believe, was added into the code to ensure that everybody who pays only their fair share of the road improvement fee, no more and no less. The appellant, in the letter, I tried to paraphrase the letter to make it a little bit shorter. I only made it a little bit shorter. Although I label this as an appeal point, I think the appellant probably offered it more as a means to set context as to an actual reason. But essentially, her family has owned this parcel for some time. Parents left it to the two daughters to split and share for so that each would have their own home. And although this sets the context for it, these are not criteria that satisfy the Title 13 waiver requirements. It also does not address what to do with the additional traffic demand for the new home that will be built. Might also add for context, this is a tiny view of the parcel map that was submitted some time ago, actually just a few months ago. And two of the 40-some-odd conditions that went with this map, one required the Cayuca Street, which was a gravel road at the time, to be paved, and the other was that the map would be noted such that anybody who bought that parcel or anybody who looked at that map would know that a fee would be due whenever a building permit came in. The second point, which I believe is probably appellant's biggest point, is that they already spent a bunch of money paving Cayuca Street, which the picture on the left is Cayuca Street a couple of years ago from Google Street View, and the picture on the right was taken, well, this morning with the sun in my face. So you can see that the picture, we have a nicely paved road. That road has been inspected by Public Works and it's being used by the public right now. The point to remember is the fee that we're collecting is meant to be used for certain specific projects. They're meant to mitigate traffic impacts from development. You can see on the left list, which you've seen these lists virtually every year when we bring these fees back to the board for review. Third point brought up in the appellant's letter is that they'd also like to waive the filing fee for waiving the costs. And that fee has been established to basically pay for staff time to prepare this report and to meet with you. Short history on this. Over the years, there have been 23 appeals since the fee was established in 1991. And you can see that almost half of them were denied. Many were adjusted, and some were waived. And as we said in the staff report, it's staff's recommendation that you deny the appeal to waive or reduce the fee, and also deny the appeal to waive the appeal fee. And I feel compelled to let you know that while it staff makes this recommendation, I just want to assure the appellant.
And my mother passed away in 2010. My sister Nancy Cherry and I inherited Block 55 in the Eddie Hasbro addition in the town of Templeton, referred to as 508 Eddie Street. Our parents' property was one parcel, and on May 14, 2012, we filed with San Luis Obispo County to have the parcel split into two lots. My sister would inherit the lot that included my parents' home, and I would inherit the second lot. My intention was to build a home for myself on this piece of property. As of today, we have paid $50,248.46 to split the property, and one of the county's requirements to split this property was to put a new road on Cayucas and improve Eddy Street. The cost to split the lot and to complete the road improvements to Cayucas and Eddy Street totaled $139,217.92. I'm not disputing the need for road impact fees. I believe that they are necessary. However, I believe that I have contributed to this by putting in and paying for road improvements. I paid a total of $88,969.46 to complete the road improvements on Cayucas Street and a road I currently do not plan to use as my access point. The entrance to my home will be on Eddy Street and not Cayucas. I am requesting that you waive the road impact fee as well as the appeal fee.
All right. Thank you very much. Any of my colleagues have questions? Seeing none, well, thank you.
Thank you.
If we do come up, we'll ask you back. With that, I'll open it to the general public to comment. I have no request to speak, and seeing no one coming forward, I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board, to the supervisor of the district, Mr. Meacham.
Thank you. Excuse me. Frank, could you put up the second, I think it was the second slide that you had up there?
This one?
The next one up. I'm sorry, go the other way. The nexus issue. Based upon absence of any reasonable relationship under nexus between traffic generating impacts of the new development. Now, from what I understand, they have one home there. We're going to have two. They've had entrance from another area. I don't understand how this is being impacted, how the roads are being impacted, because in our road improvement fees, it says that it is used to fund projects through all of their phases, including environmental work, permitting, design, right-of-way, and construction. So, I mean, I think they've accomplished that by doing the improvements on the conditions, and I think that I don't understand where there's an additional impact that's being created.
Well, I might add, there is really minimal impact to the streets adjacent to the home. I think that's pretty obvious without doing any study. However, over time, as the population grows in the town, the major parts of the network get impacted. So we look at what happens at general plan build-out, find out what will the traffic be generated by then, how much development will it take us to get from here to build-out, what projects will be needed to mitigate that additional traffic, and what will it cost, and then divide that cost among the number of homes built. So, for instance, we have no way of knowing the habits of every person in every house, but on the average, we would expect homes like this one being proposed or the ones next to it are going to use a Los Topless interchange. We had to do some major expensive improvements there. There are more improvements that will be needed before we reach build out, and the fair share for this home or the homes next to it on any other lot would be what the fee is all about. So this person, as well as anybody else who comes in for a permit, would be paying a fair share for the improvements at Los Topless. We're still paying off the improvements at the Vineyard Interchange, and people in town would really like us to see, you know, to do something there at the Main Street Interchange, which is going to take a lot more money than we have on hand.
I understand. But I know that in the past that we have waived fees basically because it hasn't increased any kind of traffic generation. Let's say, for example, a place that had a shop that was going to convert to another shop that really didn't change the number of traffic counts that would be there. So basically, it's kind of a how do we make the fair argument that this is any different in terms of we only have two people basically using two separate roads. I don't see the impact and the nexus to the impact. I'm sorry. I'm not picking on you guys. I know you're trying to do what you've got to do.
It's fine. We get your kind of question often.
The roadway that they improved, the full road, I mean, is that all of their property? Or is this just a condition on whatever the lot split was?
It was a condition on the lot split. Improving that road is not one of the listed projects in Templeton that is needed to mitigate congestion or impacts to development.
So I guess the point would be then why would you not do that and put part of that money towards roads that did need it?
That's not how the system is set up. The system is set up, you know, I guess with any project you have direct impacts and you have cumulative impacts. The direct impacts, the way the ordinance is set up, that when somebody splits a property such as what the Condens or, you know, her parents did, you need to pave your frontage road. And you have to do a minimum. Now, it turns out they're the first ones there, so they had to do a 20-foot wide road. One could clearly make a case that they did a whole bunch by doing that. I believe the parcel across the street was in to be subdivided. The owners, I think, have backed away. They may have abandoned their project, or they might have just waited for this road to get finished, but they have the same requirement to build essentially the same road that is already built.
And that's what has to happen then? I mean, do these folks get reimbursed for part of what they did?
They did not get, there's no agreement to set up with that. It's an age-old problem. Whoever comes in first really has to pay greater freight than the people who come in. I guess one could say that the other streets that you would have to take to get to this home were paved by somebody before. Somebody else paid for those roads, and they get, I want to say a free ride, but a windfall that way. So there is no perfectly equitable way, but because they split the parcel, they have a requirement to pave the road that's in front of their home, or in front of the lots, I should say. So they didn't pave the whole street, but they did pave a 20-foot-wide strip, which is plenty, yeah. And they paved it for the length of their project, or I should say the length of their parcel.
Okay, for now.
Okay. Ms. Rick?
I just have a question kind of, I guess it's with regard to cumulative impacts and pressing. I have a question with regard to cumulative impacts and just sort of precedence setting. So if I do see a bit of the argument that Supervisor Meacham is making, especially if they've kind of jumped real high in paving that road. But so if we make, again, there's a nexus argument here. So if we make the argument that there's not an impact to the Las Tablas interchange, or to the Vineyard interchange, then as the next home or homes come through, are we setting it up that no impact fee will be paid because the same argument could be made every time? I guess my question is, if it's part of your age-old problem, I suppose, that if we were to grant this exception, what does that mean going forward?
I suppose if everybody was treated equally, if somebody came out with a similar situation, they should expect a similar response from the board. So it would be precedent setting. Now, I do recall when this fee first went into place in the early 90s. At the time, there's all kinds of development going on. Somebody was saying, who's going to pay for all the improvements needed? You know, does everybody have to pay? And the answer that the board gave at that time was that all development needs to pay its own way. It's not to be subsidized by the rest of the taxpayers. And so one way to achieve that was to set up this fee such that everybody pays, you know, a fair share of the larger problem. The people who represent developers, the building industry, so forth, has been supportive of this program. Because when they come in to bring a project and somebody asks them, how are you going to deal with your traffic impact, we can say, well, that's easy. We pay this fee and we've paid our fair share. As opposed to the alternative would be somebody, you know, a bunch of people get in without being triggered to do any improvements, and then somebody gets to pay the big bill. One could argue that would not be equitable. Therefore, we have this fee to try to spread the cost out as about as equitably as we can make it.
Thank you.
Ms. Arnold?
Thank you. This particular fee, I mean, I'm pretty sure we're all going to agree that almost $89,000 for one little single-family residence on a lot split is a pretty substantial amount of money to put towards road improvements. And even though it is...
Turn it back to you for the action, Mr. Meacham, and again, what I heard you say, Mr. Honeycutt, was the paving of the road was a condition of the lot subdivision. The road impact fee, which is $13,000, is a condition of the building permit, right?
That's correct.
I thought we had addressing this problem we bumped up to before on subdivision road improvements, which are a requirement of the Subdivision Map Act. I thought we had a reimbursement policy that would allow... a parcel that would benefit from a full-width road paving to pay their fair share eventually. Is that not in play here?
It is correct. There is provisions for a reimbursement agreement in the title, I think it's Title 13 or Title 8, I forget which. And I don't know that has to be done before the improvements are put in place. So there is an opportunity. That opportunity may have passed. It's not clear to me, but...
Okay. All right. And Mr. Flynn?
If I may, Dave Flynn with Public Works. To follow up on your question on getting
credits, essentially, for building a road. We have done that in the past in both Templeton and Napomo, but those have been strictly for roads that are already in the program. So in and around interchanges where we have to relocate the frontage roads, that's where we've used that treatment. Or if on a major street that was affected under the program, we would use that.
So it's a reimbursement within the road impact program rather
That's
than
correct.
The simple requirement of...
It doesn't pertain to all streets. It would only be those under the program would receive the credits.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Back to Mr. Meacham.
Thank you. Frank, was the full road required of them?
No. What is requirement is they're supposed to do their frontage.
Just their frontage.
However, if there's nothing on the other side, you have to take it far enough that there is a travel lane on the other side. So whoever goes in first pays more. Whoever comes in second gets a break. If we only paved half of the road, that would encourage two-way traffic on that half, and we'd have confusion on the street. And so it was determined a long time ago by ordinance, you pave your half plus enough to do the travel lane, or 20 feet minimum.
And it's really hard for me to understand $50,000 just to do the lot split. I couldn't figure that part out either. So I'm going to, you know, I'm having a hard time with a fairness issue here. It seems to me that they've gone above and beyond by putting the whole road in. They're not going to get compensated by the people across the street that have decided to either leave or whatever the case may be. But in answering to Supervisor Ray's point, that does not preclude that new owner, whatever they are, from paying the road impact fees, even though this has been, if the board were to decide to waive this because of the full improvement that they made.
Maybe it would help if we can put the slideshow back up. On the slide to the lower right there, this is out of the last time we did a major update. These are projects that the fee is collected to pay for. If in doing this lot split or doing another one, somebody also had to do one of these improvements, those improvements would offset the fee, if that makes sense. So in other words, if they were right next to, say, Florence and Las Tablas, and they had to put in a signal because of their project, they would also be paying fees that would help pay for that signal, so you don't have to do it twice. You get credit, right? However, paving Eddy Street, or paving Cayucas, rather, is not on this list. So to deal with the incremental increase in traffic impact, you need to work on one of these projects. Working on Cayuca Street does not advance any of these projects. Therefore, the cumulative impact is not addressed. Paying the fee goes towards addressing the cumulative impact, but paving Cayucas does not. So there's a direct impact as a result of the map. There's an indirect or cumulative impact, I should say, because of the home. And just as a reminder, both of those items were addressed when the parcel map was brought before. I can't remember now if it's Planning Commission or SRB. There was opportunity to talk about whether these requirements are fair or, more than fair or what. But these were the conditions that were placed on at that time and agreed to by the appellant and by the county at that time.
Okay. So can't say that I agree with it. I'm going to make a motion that we waive the road improvement fee and the waive the appeal fee.
Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
Is there any, Mr. Flynn?
I can get there just because of it. It doesn't change the fact that we have these ordinances. They're all over the place. They apply to everybody. That it's just this is how the system is set up, so that if we make exception to the system, then the whole thing, in theory, falls apart. So if somebody can help me get there, I would appreciate that.
Mr. Flynn, are you going to volunteer for that?
No, I would try to assist here. However, you know, our staff report, we feel is complete that, certainly the program provides a strong nexus already. The final map that was approved, as Mr. Hunnigan points out, elaborates on it. I could perhaps offer some ideas if the direction or the vote of your council is to waive it, you know. But you know, I think that would only be after direction and working with council.
Let me ask the maker of the motion. Did you like to propose some findings of fact that would support this?
Well, I was looking at actually as the nexus. I'm sorry, Ms. Neal.
Yeah, Rita Neal, County Council. Ms. McDonald and I are talking and looking at the ordinance section, and we may be able to make a suggestion for a finding here.
There are fairly specific provisions that are findings you would need to make in order to grant the waiver, and that, I believe, was up on a slide earlier in the presentation. So we either have to find that there's no reasonable relationship between the traffic-generating impacts of this one house and either the amount of the fee or the type of road facilities or improvements to be financed by the fee. And so you really have kind of three different components there. Is there no impact being created by the type of development, or is there is the amount of the fees inappropriate for the type of development again? And then would the fee be used toward road improvements that don't seem to really fit the project in this particular instance? And I'm kind of thinking that third category might be where we would end up. That given the road work that had been done fronting the project when the lots were split, that perhaps that project there seemed to essentially take care of some of the impacts that were generated by that initial development, which would have included the anticipated building of this home. Maybe that's something you could consider. Otherwise, we really do have to focus on those three components there.
Unfortunately, I think it's a bit of a stretch, given Mr. Honeycutt's testimony that the paving of that local road mitigates anything to do with one of the interchanges between that neighborhood and 101.
But I think the first point that you made was probably the most compelling in terms of, does this create any impact at all? And
I think the caution I would put on that point is that every single family home in this road fee area triggers the requirement for payment of the fee. And so if we start to talk about the building of one single family home not quite triggering an impact, then it does kind of put the whole program in a little bit of jeopardy, so we need to be a little bit careful there.
But I guess based upon the amount of money that was done for the road improvements that they did, it seems to me that covers it.
So I think it might be getting then maybe into those second and third categories, you know, the amount of the fee that would be required in addition to the amount of the expense put into the road frontage improvements. Combined with the fact that those road improvements did help to offset what that one single-family home would be contributing, perhaps we would end up somewhere along those lines. But again, that's, you know.
So if we take the vote, and if we were to get the vote, then you would provide us with a resolution with finding.
Correct.
Okay. And
so the finding we would be making then
would be
that essentially the fee is too onerous for what the result is?
It would be specific. It would definitely be specific to the past activity related to this subdivision and the improvements that were done prior to this one single-family home being built, and kind of tie that back to the amount of the fee in connection with the extent of the improvements made in front of the along the street would take care of the impact essentially.
So that again, we're making the word the nexus still. There's a nexus between the street improvement and the interchange improvement. That's where we're going with that finding, right?
I think it would be good if
the neighbors. It doesn't really pan out. But, you know, still, yes, they don't have to build more than what the minimum standard is. But, you know, to get to a point where we're saying Cayucas Drive is then considered to be part of the Templeton impact fee circulation program, and as such, you know, the construction of it serves as payment of the fee would be the jump you would have to make to waive the fees in this case, at least from, you know, I think the third point that council's pointing out.
Let's go. Supervisor Arnold, did you have your light on?
My quick question was for either one of you, but the property across the street, is there, there's no way that because that the street's been completely done, that the road fees could be some kind of, it has to be the agreement between the neighbors, you said, Dave, so it can't be that the county, when that property applies for subdivision, you could say, all right, your road improvement fees are going to be, or we can take what would have been your portion of the Cayucas and put it toward.
Yeah, again, something Cayucas Drive or Street, which wasn't part of the impact fee program, would have to be a joint cooperative reimbursement agreement established through the board up front, and that's outside of the impact fee program. This was something the board acted on, I think it was back in 2008. It's something that's done typically for waterline extensions, where, you know, you may put in an upsized 8 or 10-inch line, and then people over the next 10 years who add on to it will pay you back. Your board adopted a similar principle for road construction, you know, again, some 6-7 years ago. And that's something that would be available in future cases.
Okay. And I'll just add that it's sympathetic as I am to Ms. Condon's situation, having spent a considerable amount of money, I'm having trouble finding the nexus here, the differentiating factor that says this single-family house is somehow different than any other single-family house that's going to get built there. And I do think we have a precedent question here. But Council had her light on, and would you like to weigh in?
Yes, Rita Neal. Maybe a couple of comments if you wanted to vote on the motion today, you could also focus on that second factor, which is the amount of the fee given the relationship to the $89,000 that they've already paid. And is that a reasonable, because it talks about a reasonable amount of the fee. The other suggestion perhaps I could make is we continue this until next week. Staff brings back a proposed resolution with findings based on the testimony that we've heard today. The board could look at it at that time and determine if there was sufficient nexus to approve the waiver of the fee.
Motion maker?
Yeah, I'll go with that. I'll go with that. If you can come back with something and we can consider it, I'll be happy to do that.
You're going to withdraw your motion?
I'll withdraw
then?
My first second.
Okay. Ms. Arnold, did you
get
lights up?
Mm-hmm.
We'll ask for a motion on that in just a second. Again, expressing my sympathy with Ms. Condon on this, I feel we're going to have to look very carefully at some characteristic of this particular project that differentiates it. And especially, as I understood from Mr. Honeycutt, that the map, the parcel map is stamped with the fact that road improvement fees are due in and above the road improvements that were done as part of the subdivision. I think for the integrity of the program, we're going to need some very specific, project-specific language that differentiates this, and simply the amount of money on those road improvements isn't there.
Yeah, what we'll do between now and when the core agenda has to be posted is we'll work on some findings, and again, based solely on the testimony today and what's in the record, and then bring it back, and your board can continue, you know, and look at those proposed findings, add or subtract, and if you don't think they're there, then the motion, you can make a motion accordingly.
Mr. Meacham, a motion for continuance?
So moved.
Till next week?
Till next week.
Second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, none. We are continued to next week. And Ms. Condon, I'd have you communicate with staff as to exactly the timing of when we expect this. It'll probably be at the end of the day. Thank you. And Madam Clerk, our last item of the day, please.
Item number 48, submittal of a resolution authorizing, one, the surplus and sale of county-owned real property at 790 Cornwall Street in Cambria by public auction, and two, a budget adjustment to increase the library's facility planning reserved fund 12050000 by the amount of the net proceeds of sale, District 2.
The property includes 1.29 water equivalent dwelling units. Water hookups, however, are not permitted during a Stage 3 water emergency, as is currently in place for Cambria and was declared since our last auction attempt for this property. This photo, second photo on the screen, shows the property. One of the parcels is subject to an irrevocable license agreement to provide parking for 5 cars to serve an off-site development. Escrow must close within 45 days following the Board of Supervisors' acceptance of the bid. All bids must include a security deposit in the form of a cashier's check payable to the County of San Luis Obispo in the amount of $10,000. The successful bidder's deposit is non-refundable and will be applied to the purchase price, and unsuccessful bidder's deposits will be returned. There's only one condition of sale that is allowed, and that is the approval of the water transfer application by the Cambria CSD, and the property will be sold as is. Closing costs will be split as is customary in our county, and upon successful close of escrow, a real estate sales commission of 3% of the selling price, or an amount as would be determined by government code, shall be payable from the proceeds of sale to a selling broker who is instrumental in obtaining the offer to purchase, provided that the broker and commission are identified at the time of the bid. This concludes staff's presentation. The next step will be a call for public comment, followed by the auction to be held by the board.
Ms. Van Fleet, if we had public, I would call for public comment. But in fact, I have to call for public comment anyway.
Well, you get some.
Yeah, right. Seeing no one and having no request to speak on this item, I'll close it to the public and let you proceed with the necessary steps in this unfortunate situation.
Yes, unfortunate is that we have no bids to present to your board at this time. However, we have prepared a follow-up resolution to reschedule the auction for October 7th with bids due by October 6th at 5 p.m. We are also taking a dramatic price reduction of $40,000 off of the minimum bid, a minimum bid of $210,000 included in that resolution. We will be able to market the property throughout the summer months and hopefully come back on October 7th with a bid. If anybody would like to obtain a bid form from me, my phone number is 805-781-4688. Or I can be reached by email at lvanfleet@co.slo.ca.us.
Thank you, Ms. Van Fleet. I'll make a motion in a minute, but as I understand it, without written bids, we can't take oral bids in case anybody on the dais might want to jump in on this rare opportunity.
Did you want to buy this?
Seeing none, I'll move staff's recommendation on the reschedule.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. No further discussion. Roll call vote, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Ms. Ray?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Van Fleet. We are adjourned for the day. Till next Tuesday.